Emmy Award nominees and TV writers Dan Harmon and Dino Stamatopoulos, Chicago food writers Monica Ang and Louisa Chu, and poet and commentator Mario Smith. Now here's your host, a man available to be invited to your Oscar party, Justin Kaufman.
I won't bring anything, but I'll come sit on the couch. Or I guess an ottoman. Or I'll watch from outside the window. Whatever. I just want to come over. Welcome to The Download, everybody. With you till 11 o'clock tonight. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio. If you're getting ready for the weekend, starting out your night, or Friday nights are like any other Tuesday. Hey, we got your back here. A great show tonight here on The Download. First up, we're going to talk about the news of the week and update you on the latest in the races for state's attorney and other races. I'm excited. There actually is a live televised debate tonight, but does it matter? Have voters already made up their mind when it comes to the race for top prosecutor? We'll talk about that and some other issues like Chicago State University as we wrap up the week with our regular commentator Mario Smith. Also, we'll be voting for will we be voting for presidential candidates come mid-March? Some pundits believe the race for both parties will be wrapped up by Super Tuesday. Will Senator Sanders still be standing by mid-next week? And will he matter for the voters here in Illinois? We'll talk about that. Well, my guests tonight at the big table are nothing short of geniuses. Dino Stamatopoulos and Dan Harmon are the men responsible for the most groundbreaking television in American history. Talking Ben Stiller Show, Mr. Show, Community. The list is long. And now, the two are the producers behind Charlie Kaufman's Anomalisa, which is rated R. It's stop motion. It's an animated film, and it's nominated for an Academy Award. Everyone says it's going to lose to Inside Out. And if it's between those two movies, maybe it should. Because Anomalisa is not Inside Out. But we'll talk with Dan and Dino about not just about Anomalisa, but about the future of television. I'm excited. You know, these guys have been pushing boundaries for years. And you know, they're rethinking about how television should be made, not just with new studios, but with new funding opportunities. Could we see a model that's similar to Wall Street? You know, use capitalism to produce television. Something to think about. Great convo coming up at 8 o'clock. Also tonight, the paleo craze sweeping the nation, but the man behind it says it should just go away. The train may have left the station on that. Also, what does it take to go vegan? I'm happy to welcome back my old friend, Chicago Tribune food writer Louisa Chu, and Chicago Public Media food and health reporter Monica Ang to chew on these topics. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. And it's Friday night, so that means frying pan. Steve Gadlin returns for another unique opportunity for all of us, really, to get in on the ground floor on a new idea before he gives his new idea to his boss, Mark Cuban. It's the best hour in Chicago radio, and it comes up at 10 o'clock tonight. That's The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin. All that plus news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon, and also production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago, starring those who know it well. All right, let's kick this off, huh? Let's have a great show tonight. Why don't we start with The Carryout? The Carryout, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Governor Chris Christie endorsed Donald Trump for New Jersey State Tollway Authority chief. Oh, sorry. Wait. Nope, I read that wrong. Endorsed him for president. Wow. This is good news for Trump after a less than spectacular showing at the 10th Republican debate last night. 10th! Jeez. Unfortunately for Ben Carson, that was only his 9th, because there's no way you can count last night as a full debate. I mean, maybe I'll give you 1/10. I mean, he said one thing all night, and it was dumb. Cruz and Rubio, on the other hand, well, they know how to keep the cameras on them by engaging Donald Trump. Trump stuck to his script, which happens to be his campaign platform. I'm awesome and number one. You know what, Donald? Take a hint from hip-hop. Nobody likes a rapper who just raps about being number one. Rap about the Kardashians. Tomorrow, the Democrats duke it out in South Carolina. Hillary Clinton's expected to win, where Bernie Sanders is expected to send the suit back. This is cold! It's cold! Ugh. Mayor Emanuel's police task force is not being received well. Protesters shut down public hearings last night in Rogers Park. The mayor responded today telling protesters to join the process and not close it down for everybody else. Which protesters responded,
okay, cool. Is there free food? Oh, man, I'm hungry. Oh, no free food? Ah, oh, man, get my megaphone. Chain me to the door. We won't leave. We won't leave.
Hey, donuts in the back go a long way, Mayor. The state of Illinois reportedly has made $200 million in late fees for various stickers and services after they stopped sending renewal notices. The ultimate irony, they stopped sending the notices because of budget woes. Talk about turning a negative into a positive. And you wonder why nobody likes anybody anymore. Lincoln Towing may lose their license to tow cars. If you aren't familiar with Lincoln Towing, they're the reviled towing company that trolls Chicago neighborhoods looking for people parked too close to the corner. Have you seen the movie Lord of the Rings? You know those ghost-like horsemen that you can't kill? The ones that fly terrifying dragons in the sequels? Essentially, that's Lincoln Towing. Today, the Chicago Public Schools said that computer sciences will be required to graduate high school. When asked for comment, high school freshmen were like, what's a computer? Well, how do you swipe? And leave it to the Chicago Public Schools to be 10 years behind the curve. What do they have to do, turn on a Dell?
This is a gateway. You press on, off, move the mouse, you get to go to DeVry.
Cubs singles game tickets go on sale today. I guess they may break the record all the way back from 2008. I've seen three different stories about how this could be the year they break that record. It's almost like the Cubs might have a vested interest in generating buzz around some record that nobody cares about. Anyway, 2008, yeah, that's the Lou Piniella Cubs. Exciting. The IRS was hacked for the second time in 6 months and 700,000 accounts were affected. You know who I blame? Ben Carson. That's the one thing he talked about last night.
It's unfair. I'm always being targeted. The IRS is unfair.
Shut up, Ben Carson. In weather, it's supposed to be nice again this weekend. I might break out the ankle socks. Maybe a boat shoe. Could be a weekend for a boat shoe. In sports, the Bears plan to put the franchise tag on Alshon Jeffrey. Tight end Zach Miller is going to test free agency after his breakout year. Can I be honest for a second? Cutler's best year. Miller's breakout year. Jeremy Langford's the running back of the future. The way the media talks about this Bears team, you would think this wasn't a 6-10 squad. 34 catches from a tight end does not make me say prime time. 6-10. We could do better. The Bulls are in Atlanta tonight. Hey, a showdown with the Kirk Heinrich-led Atlanta Hawks? Nah, still not watching. How does Stan Bowman do it? The Hawks were able to deal some youngsters to get Winnipeg Jet captain and former Blackhawks Stanley Cup hero Andrew Ladd back in town. Blackhawks are balling. That's how you do it. Win or lose, this team is at another level. It's almost like they're un-Chicago sports, right? The only rival right now would be the Chicago Cubs, who not only got Dexter Fowler back on the squad for half the money, but today signed Shane Victorino to be a clubhouse mascot. Did you see the Fowler reunion yesterday where Madden gathered the team for Fowler's surprise entrance? It's so hard not to like this Cubs team. And finally, it's Oscar week, so that's something. I wonder what Zendaya is going to wear. Oh. This year, the Oscars are going to scroll thank yous underneath the award winners while they do their speeches. This is being done to speed up the broadcast so we can get to the local news quicker. I say once you take away the thank yous from the speech, this is all that's left.
Your movies are great. And I'm an actor. Bye.
Everyone's excited that this may be the year that Leonardo DiCaprio will finally be accepted in Hollywood. Well, that's the carryout for February 26, 2016. Hey, it's going to be nice this weekend, so get your order from the side window. Yeah, that's right. We just knocked a couple bricks out. More to come tonight here on The Download. Mario Smith's in the house. Talk with our Download commentator about the week that was. Both in politics and city news, sports, coming up a little bit later. 45th Ward, John Arena. Alderman will be here to talk to us about the state's attorney debate and much more. It's a Download. Stay with us. All right, coming up, Mario Smith is here. Also, Alderman John Arena is going to join us. And at 8 o'clock, Dino Stamatopoulos and Dan Harmon. We got a great show lined up tonight. Let's start the night with our man, Rob Martier. How you doing, Rob?
Not bad. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm good. I feel like it's been a. I haven't seen you in a while because we did Pequods on Tuesday. We saw you on Wednesday.
Ships passing in the night, my friend. Looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, you got any big Oscar plans? You host an Oscar party?
I'll watch. Yeah, I'm always interested.
I'm thinking I'm not going to watch this year. I think I'm going to do the red car. I'm going to pump, not for any social boycott or anything like that. It's just the idea that I'm just like, you know what? I don't care.
I understand that. But you know what? I'm a Chris Rock fan, and you know, I'm a movie fanatic. I wish I could get out to see more of them, though. That's the only problem.
I know. I'm the same way. I feel like every time this year, part of the year rolls around, and they're like, here are the 35 pictures that are nominated. Right. I'm like, I've not seen any of these.
Is that one on Netflix yet?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, having an 8-year-old, I feel like I've seen every movie that would be in, I guess, an animated category. You know, like, I saw Inside Out, which I guess is up, which is okay. And I saw Anomalisa, which we're going to talk about at 8, which you couldn't have two more opposed films in the same category. Those are, I think, the only two movies I saw. Is Star Wars up? That's not up, right?
Should be. Absolutely.
It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know what? This is a once a month occurrence. It's just, I guess, no, we did January.
Did we?
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
Or maybe we did December.
It was Christmas time. Was it? I don't know.
Well, Mario Smith is a poet, commentator, radio host. He's got his show, News from the Service Entrance, on WHPK every Thursday.
Three shows till suspension.
Three? Is that what it is?
That's what I'm calling it.
What are the three shows then?
I can't publicly talk about what's happening at WHPK, but there is something very diabolical happening at the radio station.
Oh, no.
And I have until March 17th to comply or I'll be suspended indefinitely. So that
are they going country? Is it all country?
That would be awesome. I'd love to work there if it was all country.
Mario's a longtime commentator and radio host in Chicago, and he's my guest tonight. I kind of joked with Rob about not watching the Oscars, not for any sort of social boycott. For you, are you going to watch the Oscars? I mean, are you angry about the fact that African American nominees were omitted?
First of all, Rob Martyr, great voice. What a voice. He's like the velvet
greatest.
Fog of news. I'm not angry. I'm ambivalent, man. I mean, you know, we'll be getting jacked so much. It's like, whatever. Okay, so you don't want to give us an award or us, like I'm acting.
Yeah, right.
You don't want to give Michael B. Jordan
an award. Speaking for all actors.
You know, okay, hi. No, you don't want to give Michael B. Jordan an award that he deserves. It's the highest honor to get if you're an actor or a filmmaker or in that industry. And you don't want him to have it. Okay, man, we're fine. We'll create our own award. You know, screw it. I mean, to be angry about it and to have emotional feelings about it. Like, some people are really angry.
Yeah, right.
Like, they're mad. And I'm like, you know, there's so much going on the planet. I'm like, whatever. I don't even get to the movies as much as I would like.
Right.
Like, at this point, I want to see Deadpool, and I kind of don't want to see anything else for a while. I'm just going to go all superhero movies.
There you go. You can't go wrong.
And then, am I a bad person if I want to see that movie with Steve Carell? You know?
Which one? The Big Short?
The Big Short. I think
that. Why would you be a bad person?
That's kind of how the whole Oscar boycott sounds in my head. It's like, man, I know you're not going to see the Big Short, are you? I'm like, I might want to go see that. Man, ain't no brothers in that movie.
Do you feel like the African American community is putting a little pressure on you to make sure you watch only black films?
Oh man! First of all, if I had my way, I'd watch Michaud films, you know, or Claudine, or The Spook Who Sat by the Door every day. And I guess I do have my way. I can do that if I want to. No, I think the pressure, and it's placed in the right place, is on Hollywood to do what they say they're going to do, which is be diverse. This is a diverse planet, you know? I can't wrap my mind around every nominee is white, and that just does something to me wanting to watch the show. I would watch it for only one reason, to see what Chris Rock is going to say that'll fix it so he never hosts the show again. I think that's going to be
awesome.
He's
got a lot of pressure.
Oh,
the other, you know,
him.
Staying on the same thread, I mean, the television show Black-ish had a big scene that talked about sort of articulated racism. Anthony Anderson, he did a great monologue to end the latest episode. And it's going viral. I mean, to its credit, I mean, it's one of those things where I think, you know, it could have been much more generic. And what happened with that monologue was it was very specific about just sort of what the Black community is dealing with today.
I'm going to tell you, man, when I saw it, I got a little emotional about it. I mean, what he said is what I hear people say all the time. Is you got to, the premise behind it was showing his children what was really happening.
And his wife was like, I don't want to show him the world out there when you're talking about police shootings and things like that.
And I'm kind of agreeing with the character that Anthony Anderson plays. You've got to educate your children about what's really happening on this planet. Over 1,000 people were killed by the police in 2015. That's not like in a 10-year period. That's 12 months, you know? And your kids need to know when you get out on the street and you're out doing your thing, you have to be mindful of where you are and what's going on. And I think that that's a brilliant piece of television. I think that show is so much better written now than it was when it first started. And they, the viral piece is only like a minute and 50-something
seconds.
It's
worth a watch. Press
but,
play.
Oh, man, yeah, don't even think about it. Just watch it. And I think the way that they played it out, it's I don't want to sound away. It's white people friendly. You know what I mean? You can you can watch it and actually have your children, well, why ask them, how do you feel about
this? Well, it's a great,
this, you know?
I mean, it's well-written articulation of racism.
I think I'm not like the greatest piece I've ever seen on TV, but it's pretty good. Yeah. I tell you what I have seen on TV that is troubling.
Uh-oh.
Oh, that Ken Duncan commercial.
Yes, good transition.
Who in the hell are the friends of Juliana, whatever her name is? I don't want to know.
Right.
They're her friends?
Fascinating.
They
sound like
friends. They
Ken
sound
Duncan,
like
who's been
people.
On this program, and he's a Democrat who flipped over. He did a flip flop, and he voted against a Mike Madigan bill.
Man, that's...
And now he's up for re-election, and the Democratic machine is running anti Ken Duncan ads in the Democratic. They're supporting his.
Wow.
Now the irony on the other side is Bruce Rauner is giving money to Ken Duncan.
Oh yeah.
So now you have, but what's ultimately happening is there's something I saw the article. It's like Mike Fouché talked about it on Tuesday. There's something like $2 million thrown into this campaign where it essentially comes down to, I think it's like 13,000 votes, so it's like almost $200 per vote.
Man, look, I know Ken a little bit. I've been knowing Ken Duncan a long time when I was deeper into the poetry world, and I know him as being a good guy. I didn't have a clue that he didn't pay his child support. He did. He ate a goat. He did all kinds of stuff. That commercial is terrible. Well, but the money that's being spent, though, to get him out of office says a lot about who they want in. I don't know what her agenda is.
Well, she'll vote whatever Mike Madigan says.
Well, I guess that's what they all do, right? Except for a budget.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, thinking about what I find interesting about it is that Ken Duncan was a Democrat supported by Madigan for the last couple years, meaning they knew about this stuff. The stuff that they're now saying he shouldn't be in office, and it's because he didn't vote one way, they've decided to make him out to be a monster when just 6 months ago he was their rank and file Democrat.
Their boy, he was their man. Right. Ken Duncan, I mean, if they're running him down, I wouldn't want to be in the state legislature. Why? No.
Well, let's talk about you know, some of the news that's happening. Obviously, Chicago State University a big one today. Layoff notices went out to staff, administrative. They have to do that just for unions and things to say in a certain time you're going to be laid off if we don't get the money from the state. A lot of pressure being put on Bruce Rauner because the budget's not done and public education funding at the higher education level is being cut.
Yeah.
This is a you know, primarily African American institution, about 4,000 students, and it's really becoming the poster child for what is again a situation in which the government is letting down its citizens.
I'm very empathetic toward the people of Chicago State University, the students and the staff. I have friends that teach there, and I'm like, you know, this. this is just all what I said months ago about Rom Rauner. You know, I know his name's Bruce. Rom Rauner is a dangerous individual. If they allow Concordia, Illinois State, Chicago State, all these universities that rely on money from the state, if they all start shutting down, what does that say about the fact that people overwhelmingly voted for Sam the Butcher to come and do this? And at Chicago State University, for full disclosure, I helped an ex-girlfriend graduate from Chicago State. Okay. If they're not going to give her scholarship back, which I would be cool with it if they did, because she's an ex, they can just rescind her work. I feel like if you're the governor of the state of Illinois that's crippled because of its corruption, you have a chance to do something right now that will at least get people to think of you in a different light, maybe not the best light, but a different light, which is pass the budget. The reluctancy of this governor to allow those politicians to do what they're supposed to do, mm-hmm. it's agonizing. And it's like, okay, what we were talking about earlier, you don't want to vote for me?
I was going to say, let's play devil's advocate here, because the people that are affected by a lot of these, the fact there's no budget, mm-hmm. are mostly Democrat voters.
Mm-hmm.
Low income, poor people will always be voting for Democrats. African-American base here in the south side of Chicago, we've seen services be cut, but also Chicago State University. So, you know, this is somewhat political in the way that Bruce Rauner is not cutting funding and services for his voting base.
Well, let's not forget now, Reverend Rooftop,
Cory Brooks,
uh-huh, and James Meeks all but said, if you don't vote for Rauner, you're insane. That's basically what they said.
Interesting.
And now Meeks got a nice gig with the governor. I don't know what Reverend Rooftop is doing, probably sitting on a roof someplace, plotting his future. And it's in their wake, Chicago State might close. Now, the head of education, if I'm not mistaken, in the state of Illinois is James Meeks, right?
Yeah.
And State Chicago Board, yeah. State might close. Right. That says a lot about what's going on in Springfield. A lot.
Mario Smith is a commentator, poet, and radio host. Let's take a break. We'll come back more with Mario. And 45th Ward Alderman John Arena is going to join us as well. We'll talk state's attorney's race, Bernie Sanders, some more politics here in the city of Chicago. Stay with us here on The Download. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Mario Smith is my guest tonight. Yeah, he's a commentator, poet, radio host. You can check out his podcast, The Clock is the Enemy. Also, yes. He's doing a show, I guess a podcast, Hashtag Lunchbag.
Well, Hashtag Lunchbag is an organization that helps feed Chicago's homeless. You mm-hmm. come to the Promontory tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning.
In Hyde Park.
Yeah. The Promontory, 5311 South Lake Park West. You come to the Promontory, you put lunch bags together, then you go out into the streets of Chicago and distribute the bags.
That's great.
It's awesome. And if you want more information, you can go to on Twitter at HTLB Chicago.
HTOB.
Hashtag
Chicago.
Lunch bag.
State's attorney's debate mm-hmm. is happening. It's wrapping up. There's a live debate tonight. What's your thought on the state's attorney's race? Because you could have, you know, at the beginning of the, I guess, the campaign, which would have been in the fall, especially after the Laquan McDonald shooting,
I'm getting ready to tell you.
Anita Alvarez would be toast, but it doesn't seem to be the case. She's leading in the polls, Anita Alvarez over Kim Fox. What's your thought?
First of all, adios, Anita. Hashtag adios, Anita. If you're not a registered voter, you go to your voting spot on Election Day and register to vote. She is not worthy.
Why do you say that?
It took her a year and several days to mm-hmm. figure out that the policeman killed the man in the street. I think if it would have been any other circumstance in any other part of the state or any other part of Cook County that wasn't Chicago, that wouldn't have taken 400 days.
Right.
It isn't even the fact that it took 400 days, but it's her indignant behavior post Laquan McDonald. Right. Just the smugness.
She says it wasn't her. Yeah, no, she said it was the FBI, it's the Department of Justice.
Of course she's going to say that. I mean, you know, what else is she going to say? The mere fact that she has such impunity and just mm-hmm. lack of empathy to me, and the fact that she is really on the side of law enforcement more than she's on the side of the people. I just think it's It's difficult, and it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that this woman has an opportunity to repeat as state's attorney.
Well,
so
she's
no.
leading. So let's bring in Alderman John Arena. He's of the 45th Ward, and he's also part of the Progressive Caucus. Alderman Arena, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
So let's talk. You know, Mario Smith and I are talking about the state's attorney's race. You're endorsing Kim Fox. Talk about why you made that choice. Mario just put it down why he believes that you know, we should be voting against Anita Alvarez. Why Kim Fox?
Well, I think you know, predominantly what we saw with the Laquan McDonald case really illustrated. I think something that was trending for the last 8 years with Anita Alvarez, which was a leniency towards police who had stepped over the line and excuses on when we should start taking notice of this and start acting, mm-hmm. to try to bring some balance to the system. And what we saw in Kim Fox was the ability to do the job, the experience on the prosecution side, the personal empathy and understanding that the communities need to see in that position because of her life story. And, you know, just that it was enough for me to say, look, we need a change here. We are at critical mass in terms of communities and their lack of trust from the amount of violence that they see and the lack of justice that they see that follows that.
Let me ask you, because you and several other politicians in Chicago have come out for Ms. Fox, everyone from Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, down the line, but we still see Anita Alvarez leading in the polls. Why do you think that is? What is it about this race in particular, when you think of the primary, that has voters, at least in the polls, saying that, yeah, I guess I'll go for Anita Alvarez?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of this stuff happens in the last, you know, 4 weeks of a campaign. Obviously, Anita Alvarez has name recognition. Kim Fox has never been on a ballot before. So she has that, you know, hurdle to climb in terms of what her campaign's work has to be. But when the conversation happens with a voter about who Kim Fox is and what Anita Alvarez's legacy is with Laquan McDonald, then we see a switch. We mm-hmm. see people saying, okay, there's a choice. There's an alternative to what we have. And that's what campaigns are about. They're about saying, yeah, you can accept what you have, but you have a better alternative. We just need to introduce the voters of Cook County. And that's what's going on right now. We're going to be out tomorrow in the 45th Ward with Kim, walking and knocking on doors. And the response that she gets is outstanding.
Alderman Arena, Mario Smith. Hi, how you doing?
Hey, good.
I'm wondering, and as much as you're supporting Kim Fox, the other candidate that's running, who is completely independent of any political designation,
Donna Moore,
also mm-hmm. appears to be a pretty strong candidate as well. When your decision was made, was it solely because Kim Fox had ties with President Preckwinkle, or mm-hmm. was this just the lack of trust that Anita Alvarez can continue to do the job at the clip that's necessary?
Well, the 45th Ward Independent Dems, I'm the committeeman here, and the compact that we have with my community is we interview every candidate. We want to hear from them. They're a dedicated group of about 10 people that are on my executive committee that do interviews, everything down to the lowest level judge up to offices like we're talking about here. And they interviewed Donna Moore, they interviewed Kim Fox, and they interviewed Anita Alvarez. And with Donna Moore, what was concerning to us is that she doesn't have an immediate history in prosecution. It's been 25 years since she's been a prosecutor. And that was a very limited window in her career. Mm-hmm. The last 20 years or so, she's been a lobbyist for the gaming industry. Mm-hmm. So that may make her a good manager. That may make her a good communicator. But we need somebody who understands these communities. And Donna Moore just didn't show an understanding to us of the communities that are at risk here, and an understanding of how to address the fundamental and underlying issues of trust, because her history isn't engaged the way Kim Fox's was.
Real quick, let me ask you about Bernie Sanders, because I know that you supported Bernie Sanders' campaign here in Illinois. So to talk about this, because, you know, the pundits nationally say if, you know, he doesn't go his way in South Carolina, it's not going to go his way on Super Tuesday. He may not be relevant by the time we get to Illinois.
Well, I think he's challenged those assumptions of exactly when his campaign was not going to be viable, and it started at the beginning. And then we've seen over and over again that the pundits don't necessarily get it right. I mean, look at the other side of the ballot with the Republican side, and they've been saying, well, here's when these guys are going to fall out, or when this is this guy is going to stumble. And I think what everybody has done is underestimate the Sanders campaign and the message and how it's connecting with young voters, how it's connecting with folks, whichever the demographic is, it's connecting with folks who understand that the game has been rigged against the middle class, against folks that have been struggling for jobs and for economic opportunity, for justice for a long time. And every time he comes to another state, that message gets delivered, and he is uniquely qualified to deliver it. He's nothing but authentic. And I am drawn to that, and I think the voters are drawn to that as well. So we're going to see what happens in South Carolina. He's getting, when he goes to areas, he's getting more and more engaged with the African American community, and it's I think we'll test there. But Super Tuesday's, you know, a lot of states, and there's a huge opportunity there. So it's not saying, well, you know, well, if this doesn't happen, if this doesn't happen, he has continually tripped those wires and come out the other side stronger as a campaign. And I'm really excited about the young voters that are coming out and getting engaged in the political process. And we saw that with Obama's campaigns. We know how powerful they can be. And I think we have a generation of folks that are saying, look, the alternatives to say do things the way they've been done and continue that under a Clinton campaign, a Clinton presidency, or God forbid, a Republican presidency, just don't exist for them. And so I think that is something that's really encouraging to me as a, you know, almost 50-year-old father of two, to see that the younger set is engaged in politics again. And somebody whose mission as committeeman in the 45th Ward is to make sure people are engaged in the process.
45th Ward, I got to cut you off. 45th Ward, Alderman John Arena, thanks for joining us tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, there you go. Mario, we're out of time.
I wish they would have did a poll to see if people really believe that Anita Alvarez ran through that neighborhood in that commercial. I bet you she didn't in her life.
Mario Smith is a commentator, a radio host. He is a poet. You can check out his podcast, The Clock is the Enemy.
Yeah, and March 6th.
And he's got his big his thing tomorrow, Promontory, hashtag lunch bag, where they're feeding people. I guess it's not just the homeless, anyone who wants a bag, right?
Yeah, if you come in, you make the bags, we go out on the street and distribute them.
Great to see you, man.
Hey, man, always a pleasure. Thank you, WGN.
Welcome back to WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman here on The Download. The film Anomalisa is up for the Academy.
Anomalisa.
Anomalisa. Is that what it is? Anomalisa.
Yeah, you should fact check that.
Right.
I mean, I you know, I know you don't. I know you don't like fact checking.
I wanted to fact check. You said no fact checking. Anomalisa.
Before the interview, I said, don't fact check. It'll be more interesting. And it already is.
It already is. Yeah. I've seen the film. I'm ready to go. I should know that. Anomalisa.
It's not really a film. It's digitally. Yeah, there's no film.
All right, here we go.
Now he's hyper-vigilant.
Yeah, now we're going down a road. All right, well, it is nominated for the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature.
Yes.
But this is not your normal animated fare. It's the first R-rated movie ever to be nominated in that category.
Yeah, baby.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
I didn't either, but I trust him. He fact-checks.
I've already been wrong on the title, so I don't know if that's actually you should believe that.
I believe it. I mean, it makes it sound great.
The movie is written and directed by Charlie Kaufman and Duke Johnson. Kaufman originally wrote this under a different name as a sound play for the stage.
Yeah.
The film uses stop-motion animation to bring life to life-size puppets and tell a very emotional story about loneliness. Kaufman himself says the film, quote-unquote, communicates fragility and humanity and brokenness.
Mm-hmm.
And the best part, the movie would not be made if it wasn't for the people. That's right. Anomalisa raised its initial money through a successful Kickstarter campaign, and the guys here in studio had something to do with it. It's got a slew of top talent listed as producers who were instrumental to making this film, including Dan Harmon of Community and Rick and Morty on Adult Swim fame, and Dino Stamatopoulos, who played Starburns on Community and is a man behind Moral Oral on Adult Swim. Both of these guys have their hand in some of the best comedy we've seen on American television, and they both are behind Starburns Industries, who made this movie happen.
Nice fact checking.
See?
That's really good.
So that's what I was getting at. I just wanted to make sure that all that stuff made sense. Dan and Dino are both from the Midwest. Dan from Milwaukee. Dino grew up in Norwich.
No.
No?
Yeah, I had it. Sorry.
This is just going to be the interview? We're just gonna,
sorry.
Each fact
that's the end. That's the end of that bit. I'm already bored.
Dan and Dino,
it.
Good to see you. Thanks
good
for being
to see
here.
You.
Thanks for having us.
Let's talk about this. What drew? I know that you had the Kaufman script, Dino. That's a story that I read through Variety and some others. That
yeah. Well, I didn't. I mean, Dan and I saw the radio play back in 2007 or something like that, and we both loved it, and I wanted to read it again because I thought it was brilliant. And I just kept texting Charlie and emailing him and saying, I want to read this play again. And he said, yeah, I'll look for it. Maybe it's somewhere around. And he never got it to me. And finally, I opened up a studio with Dan and a couple other guys, mostly to get that script. I mean, I just wanted to read it again. And I said, hey, Charlie, I have a studio now. Can we read that script? Maybe we can make a movie out of it. And Charlie said, sure. So I got the script and handed it off to Duke Johnson, the director. And I said, can we make this a stop motion movie? Because
you guys had worked together before.
Yeah, on Moral Oral and Frankenhole. Yeah. So, and I didn't know what stop motion meant in terms of that. You know, it was just me being an idiot and saying, let's make a movie. We don't have any other projects right now. The first project we did was Dan's stop motion episode of Community, the Christmas episode, and we just needed another project. And so I asked my friends, like Louis C.K. gave us a script and Charlie Kaufman, and this is the one Duke really responded to.
Dan, what about you? When you saw the play, and you, what drew you to this project?
My relationship with the play itself was, I truly am not exaggerating, I thought it was the best written thing I'd ever seen. Presented, you know.
Yeah, we saw them reading it.
We watched from an audience three actors sit on stools with a Foley artist perform this thing. Jennifer mm-hmm. Jason Leigh, David Thewlis, and Tom Noonan, and there was
a whole orchestra and someone doing sound effects, and it was like watching a radio show.
But it was the single most powerful thing I'd ever experienced watching that had been written, because Charlie makes the frame part of the painting. He made sure that he used the medium of three people sitting on stools to communicate something about the human condition that we're always trying to put our finger on, which is really as crass as you're attracted to strangers and you get bored with them after you achieve them.
Right.
It's like there's a fratty guy that's very capable of stating that in a way that doesn't pull you in, but it's a cathartic truth that a genius like Charlie can actually.
Adam Sandler could have done the same movie, but it would have been crap. You
know? And so that was my relationship with the material. And to tell you the truth, that's why the entire time they made it and all I did was try to raise money and step back, I kept thinking in the back of my head, should we even be making this movie?
Well, there was some thought about that, because Duke Johnson talked a little bit about, or Charlie Kaufman was resistant to the idea of putting stop motion to it.
Yeah, no, I mean, he had no idea what that meant. And in some way, he was right. You know, I look at a movie like Adaptation, which is about screenwriting, and I read that script before I saw the movie. And I thought, this is a perfect script, and it should stay this way. It should be a script. It's about writing a screenplay and adding music and a film style to it just didn't work as well.
It changed as reading
the script. And the same is true with this movie. But, you know, I think we all felt that this movie's message was very important, and well, not important, but just really interesting and fascinating. And let's let as many people as possible witnesses.
Well, you guys, I mean, being fans of what you saw on stage that night and also what you see now with the film, what's changed? I mean, is the spirit the same? Is it the same experience that you had in the theater?
Yeah, I think the spirit is the same. He certainly added to the visuals, because the actual premise of the radio play isn't just reliant on sound. Certainly the way it was presented is reliant on sound, but the idea of people getting bored with each other is visual, it's oral, it's everything. It's an experience. So adding visuals, I didn't feel hurt it in any kind of way, and I think they did that in a brilliant way.
What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I do think, looking at it as objectively as I can, that, yeah, that's exactly what happened, is that if I had ever panicked through my limited view about, oh, this was meant to be audio, why are we making a movie out of it? What Charlie ended up doing is he then created the video version of what was happening in audio, because I know people who had never heard it as an audio piece, when they watch it, they're astounded to hear that point of view on it, because they think this movie is entirely about the visual. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of course it is. The design of the characters' faces is
and certainly a lot of that credit goes to Duke, who is a very visual director, and I think he had a lot to do with
it. And I want to talk about that, just about what you guys think when it comes from just the stop-motion animation in this form. Mm-hmm. One of the great things about the movie is the sound design, because, you know, at the top of the movie and the end, you have this sort of, you know, almost like sound wall of voices. But one of the great things about it is just the fact that you really do feel the sense of, as you guys are talking about, using strangers or, you know, getting bored with them. And the voices are the same. I mean, it's great, and it's something at first you don't really pick up on when you're watching, but as you go further into the movie, you recognize that all the voices in this film are voiced by the same person.
Right. There's two main characters played by David Thewlis and Jennifer Jason Leigh, and they are, you know, what the story really is about, but everything else is voiced by Tom Noonan, who has this great, almost androgynous voice that it plays everyone. He plays little children. He plays women. He plays men.
He doesn't put on an accent. He doesn't change it. Like, hi. No.
No,
he does.
No,
his
he's
voice.
Not
that's
doing voices.
Great.
It's just the attitude that changes. Yeah. Yeah, and he's brilliant. You know,
I mean, that to me is something that obviously probably would have shown on stage in what you guys saw in 2000. So that would have been a big reason. And it stayed all the way through this process and is still a main part of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, is if you're watching Tom Noonan, David Thewlis, and Jennifer Jason Leigh sitting up on three stools, and you can see that Jennifer Jason Leigh hasn't spoken yet, but Tom Noonan has been every single voice and is just going back and forth with David Thewlis.
Yeah.
You're looking at Jennifer Jason Leigh and you're waiting for her to speak.
Yeah.
And you really do. Whereas in the movie, I think it takes any individual viewer a random amount of time to suddenly realize what's going on in terms of the, you know, playing with the facial recognition and all these things. Like, it happens for different people at different times.
Yeah, I'm actually interested in, like, how long it took you to was there a certain point where you realized what was happening?
I think when he talks to his son on the phone, and the son is the same voice, that's when you kind of get
that's
confused for just
you.
A second. Where you're like, wait, that's the same voice that I just you know, his wife, and then you realize everyone around is the same. And then at that time is when you start to realize the whole concept that everybody looks the same, everybody talks the same. That's a big part of this movie.
So the interesting thing to me is, before that, when women have the same voice as men, what are you thinking? Is there any kind of
I guess it would be. Up to that point was all him just checking into the hotel, right? That was like getting off the plane, checking into the hotel. At that point, it just, I'm not sure, because you're watching the stop motion, you're watching how brilliant it looks, like just from the creativity of putting this together. I didn't notice it.
Right. That's
I didn't
interesting.
Notice it. Yeah. We're talking about the film Anomalisa. It's a tremendous achievement for Charlie Kaufman and Duke Johnson. Two of the producers are in studio with us, Dino Stamatopoulos and Dan Harmon. It's up for the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. Let's take a break. We come back. Let's talk about the Kickstarter project, because this doesn't get done if you guys don't come in and raise money. I mean, it's not all the money, but the initial like push for this, it just, this movie doesn't get done. We don't get to see this tremendous creative achievement without your work. So we'll talk with these guys here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to WGN Radio, the download, Justin Kaufman. We have a great guest in studio, Dino Stamatopoulos. Stamatopoulos,
it's
Dan Harmon.
Whatever,
I fact-checked
whatever you
it.
Want to do.
The movie Anomalisa, obviously up for an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. We're talking about both these guys with Starburns Industries were producers on the What does that mean? What does producer mean? Is it just the idea that you raise money for this?
Yeah, producer is always kind of a, you know, it's a word that doesn't mean anything.
It's true. I mean, in television, the title means that every writer becomes a producer, mm-hmm. and that's actually a valuable thing. That's become the tradition in television, is that you gain more and more control over the content that's on the screen. In features, the word producer could mean anything.
It's interesting. I found out that executive producer means more in television, and producer means less in television.
Yeah.
And in film, producer means more, and executive producer means less. And I'm not sure why. I mean, I feel like I'm producer because I brought the script there, and I introduced Charlie Duke.
There was a big, you know, thought like, we'll raise the money because the industry, Hollywood's not interested in this project. This isn't something surprising, and I want to talk about that. But it's not like people are knocking down the door for Charlie Kaufman scripts, which is crazy. But there really was, you know, you guys had to raise the money.
Yeah, I think, you know, Charlie couldn't get his next movie made, but he lost all his backing on that. And so I think that's, you know, that led to him being open to us trying to raise money any way we could. And we didn't know how. And I think it was Justin Roiland who said, why don't you try Kickstarter?
What did you guys know about? I mean, because, you know, with the community, I mean, you had such a strong, loyal fan base that was almost outside of, you know, what Hollywood even expected. I mean, people would fall on grenades for the guys who make Community.
Right.
So you know about fan loyalty.
Yeah,
What did you know about Kickstarter getting into?
Yeah, I think Justin was like, you know, you got Charlie Kaufman, you got Dan Harmon. Use your names and try and get as much money as you can and then go from there. And that's exactly what we did. And at that point, we thought it was going to be, you know, a $500,000, you know, small independent feature, you know, with styrofoam heads and wire bodies and whatever. And so we went to Kickstarter and they said, well, don't ask for that much. That's going to scare people away. Go for $200,000. And we said, okay, I don't think we could do it for $200,000. I think we could do it for $500,000. And so we asked for $200,000 and then in a couple of days, we got $400,000, which is double the money.
And then the movie cost $8 million.
And then the movie cost $8 million. Cut to three years later.
What did you think, Dan? What did you think when we put up Kickstarter? You're like, do you think that the community loyalists are going to come out to support you? I mean, what was your thought?
I had just been fired from Community. I believe the timing of it was such that
they were rallying to, you know.
Right. That was actually fortuitous. Yeah. It was sort of like my name was clickable, and Charlie was long overdue for a comeback, and another underdog and fringe kind of guy. It felt a little like kismet in that regard, PR-wise. I think that's why we were able to get 400 grand overnight, because it was just sort of like, well, who in this equation doesn't deserve five of my dollars?
Right, yeah. Right.
The weird thing about crowdfunding for entertainment is there's a very – It's weird because we have this passion for – we all want to be part of subversion. We want to rock the pillars of heaven together. And so there was that Zach Braff line that we crossed where, you know, people decided that culturally, oh, he's asking for money. Well, wait a minute. What's going on here? Why don't you – you know, when you're kickstarting a feature of some kind and it's a person whose name you've heard, your justifiable first question is, aren't you just some – rich dude,
right. Can't I mean, you just Dan make Harmon your own Charlie movie? Kaufman. I mean, you should make your own movie. Assume, you
know, and actually, Charlie Kaufman called me up and he said, "You're using my name, and it makes it sound like I'm begging for money. Quit doing that."
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, he was actually really angry for a while at us, and
there
for
was,
good
there
reason.
Was that backlash. I mean, there was that was at the time more Hollywood, you know, players using Kickstarter as opposed to the kid at Columbia College who's trying to make a film. And
yeah, they think we just
burn
money. You know?
But there is something to it because, you know, Charlie Kaufman himself talked about after the economy tanked in 2008, nobody wants a Charlie Kaufman movie anymore. When I talk about the Hollywood studios, they all want Spider-Man 10.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's hard for the Charlie Kaufmans, for the Dan Harmons to actually get backing to create something idiosyncratic.
Yeah, the way I look at crowdsourcing, I mean, I'd be the first to agree from those trenches. I'd say, yeah, wait a minute. There's something wrong with this model. But it just got started. And I don't know what's going on with, like, Indiegogo and the places that you know, now crowdfunding is – it's not going to go away. It's not a fad. It's like hip-hop. It's like it's here. It's a new way to finance a project, period. The big question is, can television and movies make the leap into – a sort of beautiful, almost like kind of mutual fund kind of juggling of this money to the point where you can actually just be an investor mm-hmm. in a thing. So imagine a world, and maybe we're here already. I really haven't like gone to these sites and figured it out. I feel like we kind of botched the crowdfunding for Anomalisa, and we owe it to we have to get our crap together before we ever
try
to.
Why? How did you botch it? I don't know. We just sort of overnight.
There's a culture to that whole thing. It's like you owe them updates. You owe them right. like people are investing.
They're
in your
big
thing.
Babies. I think they're big babies.
We couldn't. Well, they were left in the dark.
Sorry.
They didn't. The people get excited about.
They
something.
They got a great movie.
If you say it. I want to make a new kind of suitcase, it's got a handle on it. It's going to make it easier to lift. People get excited about saying, "This is capitalism at work." Here's my $5. They do get antsy if then you go off the grid. You know, with it doesn't matter that it's only $5. The point is that the person got off their credit card. They wanted to get excited about this thing. It's not $5 that they're investing. It's our actual enthusiasm. I mean, there's the starving African children commercials. They're asking for less money than that. And it's like our cynicism keeps us locked in line. When we break through that membrane, we really feel entitled to something, and we should. I see a world where, you know, Vince Gilligan says – it's going to cost $10 million to hire for union wages, for good, fair wages, mm-hmm. hire a crew and a couple sound stages to make the next Breaking Bad. Everybody that pays $5 first, they get back end. They actually start making money.
This isn't
off
altruistic.
Of,
this isn't sort of I love this artist. It's more
no,
like
it's capitalism.
You're actually making
it's,
money.
It's yeah, both. Right, it's right, both right, at the right. same time because yeah. that's how we express our love of television.
Right, right.
We know that it's derivative and it's crass right. and it's industry. We don't have time. We have to work. So we're not quite snobs. Otherwise, we'd watch black and white French movies about tea kettles like just whistling.
I love those.
We love our television. We love it empty-headed. We love it when it's high quality. And one of the things that we love about it and how we express our love of it is how successful it is.
Yeah.
Oh, Big Bang Theory, you got this. And yeah, that. We have a whole relationship with our perception
with how well it
success.
Does in ratings and things
and so
like
people
that.
Can
yeah.
very crassly, you know, go, I'm going to put $3 into Louis C.K.'s new show. I mean, we would yeah. love that. And that you could just walk around Chicago with a cigarette holder and go like, yeah,
I'm a producer.
I'm into Louis C.K. for like $90, you know, and I think it's going to turn into like $120.
It could be the new FanDuel.
Because, you know, when you're at a party and you go like, oh, you haven't seen this yet, and you're yeah. an early adopter of
That's
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, what if that also meant you were kind of rich? What if that yeah. meant you were like, you haven't seen Game of Thrones? Oh, I was like, I saw it like right away. That's what actually.
That's why I have this top hat
here's,
on.
Yeah, here's yeah. Your beer's on Game of Thrones because yeah. I kind of got it early.
Dan Harmon, Dino Stamatopoulos, both producers for the film Anomalisa. Let's take a break for the news. We come back. I'd love to talk to you guys about your time in television. Obviously, you guys have found a home at Adult Swim. I mean, both of you have done tremendous stuff, and Adult Swim continues to be a creative place for great television minds, especially out in L.A. But let's talk about what that means for you yeah. guys, your career, and so forth.
Sure, sure. I just want to hear the news. Let's hear the news.
First a break. We'll take a break, then the news.
Okay.
That's all good. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN.
Wow, that was interesting news.
I can't believe that happened in
Whoa.
The world.
That is amazing. Really. It's kind of good and bad.
It's both. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it kind of makes you just want to stay inside and listen to the radio.
Yeah, it really yeah. does. That's
I love the radio.
There'll be another news at the top of the hour.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah,
so another
can
news?
We, can we news. Can we stick around after the interview?
You can just, say, yeah, you can do the you can do
I want to listen to the
there's
news.
There's so much news.
Yeah.
And there's weather and traffic. Don't forget about weather and traffic.
Oh, yeah. I love all that.
Dino Stamatopoulos, Dan Harmon in studio with me. They are two of the producers of the movie Anomalisa, which is up for the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature.
I'm going to the Oscars.
Are you going?
You know.
I was going to ask that. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to beg for tickets. They wouldn't let me in.
Why? What?
Because the Producers Guild, you have to fill out a form and tell them why you should be in the Producers Guild. And I told the truth. You know, they would ask, were you there every day? And I said, no, not every day. But, you know, I was there in yeah. case anyone needed, you know, I didn't want to, you know, too many cooks spoiled broth. And, you know, I told them exactly what I did. And they said, well, we don't feel like you're a producer on this movie. And I said, okay. And then Charlie and Duke wrote a rebuttal. And apparently there were all these judges coming in, like, in a couple of weeks to reevaluate. And they called me up, the Producers Guild called me up and said, in order to reevaluate, you have to write why you deserve to be a producer.
Essays?
Yeah.
Nonstop essays?
Yeah. And I said, I already did. I told you. And they said, well, we need more. And I said, well, no, I told you everything. They said, yeah, but we need more. So you want me to lie? No, but just put more. I'm like, well, no, I put everything. So you want me to lie? And they said, no, but you
just
really,
so you know,
you
everyone
really,
lies.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You really need to put more. And there are judges coming in, and they're already scheduled, and we really need you to write this. And I said,
all right,
you know what? Just Xerox the other one.
Yeah, right.
And put it in front of them. And we can't do that. And I never wrote it. And apparently the judges came, and they're like, well, why are we here today? And they're like, just go home. And so I didn't. And then I had to beg. And then I found out my daughter wanted to go to the Oscars, and I'm like, oh, I should have. Lied.
That's the moral of the story.
So Duke Johnson had two extra tickets, and I'm going.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. How about you? Going to go?
No. None of that.
He didn't beg.
You got to beg. Yeah.
I didn't. I'm happy with my title. I did exactly. I was part of a company that said it's a good idea to spend as much money as it takes to get Charlie Kaufman back on the screen, and that. Shouldn't get me a tux or an award. Should just get me a title in the movie, which is what
well,
I
you don't have to
I'm worried
Genghis,
about the tux.
Yeah. Go to Genghis. I think it's Genghis or Genghis in
you
LA?
Think they'll have it the day before? Because I don't know. I procrastinate.
Let's talk about that. You know, two things I want to talk about. You guys have, you know, both been involved with so many great shows that are.
Don't
been
laugh
out.
At
no,
us.
I'm not laughing. I'm laughing at how absurd it is at your resumes. I mean, it's crazy how much you guys have done in Hollywood. And a lot of it has been at the forefront and considered to be legendary comedy shows. You know, Moral Oral is the one project.
Exception.
Yeah,
the one exception.
It's the one project where it's sort of like it's on Adult Swim. It's supposed to be funny, but it turned out. Not funny. Yeah. It turned out to be a very serious kind of almost, you know, I don't want to say depressing, not unlike Anomalisa. Talk right. about your relationship with creating, you two both television comedy writers, your careers, your relationship with producing things that aren't funny.
I think that most comedy writers, as they get older, they become less funny. and they want to concentrate on other areas of life, which is reality. You know, I think when you're a kid, everything's funny and goofy, and you have that kind of energy, and you get a little more introspective as you get older. I think when I started Moral Oral, I wanted to get to that place, and I wanted to get to that place too fast, and I did. Like, first season was very goofy, second season was less goofy, and third season was drama, where the head of Adult Swim had to call me up and say, "Buddy, you're depressing me. I gotta pull the plug on this." And that's what happened.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. But I couldn't have done it any other way. You know, I just got bored with just doing pure goofiness.
Dan, what about you? I mean, obviously Community was a great comedy. I mean, do you see yourself making more of a transition in your career to something outside of comedy?
Well, that's hard to say. Do I see myself? Yeah, right. I don't know. But I know as far as what I've done, there's an amount of sap to it. There always is. And I justify that. First, creatively, by saying, well, comedy is – it's the first joke you ever hear is when you're a baby. It's the game of peekaboo. Your mom covers her face, and so she's gone. And as a baby, your mom being gone is a terrifying thing. And babies actually instinctively just start crying as soon as they don't see a face in front of them. And so the game of peekaboo, which people play in Africa, they play it at the North Pole, they play it anywhere a human being could ever be – dropped. It's an instinctive human thing. It's not cultural. That when we do that, you're screaming in terror at the worst thing that could ever happen to you. And a laugh is that unique human thing when the mom shows her face and goes like, "It's a joke. It's a bit. I'm not gone." And you. A kid, their first laugh is just a scream of terror interrupted like that. And you're like, ah! Which is what happens to you on a roller coaster. You're terrified you're going to die, and then you start laughing. So creatively, I justify going to a dark place. It's like, well, what is the funniest joke you're ever going to tell? It's going to involve death and sadness, misery. Logistically and strategically, I would just say, I'm not as funny as Tina Fey. So when we were doing Community, I would say to the writer's room, why would we have a Tina Fey contest with Tina Fey? We'll always come in second. Why are we trying to write 30 Rock? Let's do 80% of 30 Rock in terms of comedy, and let's fill the other 20% with the thing that 30 Rock doesn't do, which is just make you a little sad and believe that people are real.
Yeah, and also
it's cheating. It's cheating.
And also, I was inspired by what Kurt Vonnegut once said was, make your characters go through the worst hell possible and have them come up at the end. And that's what a story is, you know. And I think that's what we do in little versions, whether it's episode by episode or season by season. you know, we want to drag our characters into the worst hell garbage possible and have them come up heroes.
And no matter what you're laughing at, no matter how light you think the laugh is, the truth is a person farting, which may be the most levity, like it must be the most empty, but you know, it's death and decay. You know, it's expelled a putrefaction coming from the inside of a body that's supposed to be alive.
Well, also Danny's crap.
And it makes a little trumpet sound.
It is adorable.
Let me ask you guys, we talked earlier in the interview about Charlie Kaufman and the idea that in Hollywood's economic model right now is not interested in a Charlie Kaufman movie. Both of you guys have been involved in projects that have been just critically acclaimed, and yet, you know, maybe a network makes a decision based on, well, it's not Two and a Half Men, or it's not, you know, it's not as good. It's not, the ratings aren't here, so we have to get rid of it. And you've had, I mean, you, Dino, you've been involved with, I mean, I think of almost all, Ben Stiller was sort of like that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Show.
Mr. Show was definitely like that. I mean, it's almost like they live after.
Every I've never been on a show that's been popular at the time. I guess the closest is Community. You know.
So let me ask you about that relationship, because you guys work in Hollywood and you have great credits to your name. How does that play out for you both as producers or writers, you know, moving forward? I mean, is it make it easier or harder to get work?
I think that's why I wanted to start a studio. It's difficult to get anything sold, and in order to, you know, I mean, it's still just difficult as a studio to get something sold, but we want to get to the point where, you know, we can make enough money and be our own network in some kind of way.
Yeah, because the future is just the pulverization of media. I mean, you experienced it in radio before it hit TV. Music was the canary in the mine. You can look at the music industry and see what's coming for television. Initially, we thought, all musicians are going to starve to death and go away. Well, no, the more accurate way of saying it is that there's going to be a lot more work for a lot less pay, and that's what's happening to TV. Mm-hmm. So, and it's like the shift that's happened in the last 5 years is you're not going to typically be writing a pilot that may or may not get picked up, that then may or may not get ordered for more series, like all those kind of like prestigious hoops that you go through. It's becoming increasingly more, as Silicon Valley is merging with television, it's becoming more practical, where you go to a experienced vendor of television and you say, I will take 10 episodes of your show if you can make them for this much money. Mm-hmm. That's a big basic contract, like if you're making a skyscraper.
Right.
And so it's more no nonsense. It's a little, probably therefore a little harder to break in and all of a sudden be overnight, like having a fantasy life.
Yeah. Who suffers from that, from a new model like
that? Well, the writers do, first and foremost. The writers are always going to suffer first. However,
and then mankind.
But TV keeps getting better. We're referring to, we keep using the phrase golden age of television. And if you really graft out, what do we really mean by that? What is the cause effect? It's not technology. It's not. It's an economic shift. There's less money to be made in television. We hit peak TV in the eyes of money people a long time ago. There's way smarter ways to make money if you're an empty Malibu clone, like, that doesn't really care about anything but hanging out with famous people. Television is not really, it's become a nerdier place. Mm-hmm. It's become less glamorous at the very, very, very top. And so what's happening now is little tiny audiences, 2 million people watch your show. Oh my God, you're a rock star. So you have the showrunner as a personality emerging,
right.
And you have lower budgets and longer episode orders.
For a guy like you, Dan, is that a good thing for you? I mean, because you're not, but I was going to say, you're going to have more options than the person who's the overnight success who's coming in because you've had credits to your name.
This is the world that I think guys like Tino and I have been operating in since the beginning. We were so much less compatible with the old world that's now finally dying. We were always living as if it was today. And it's just like, let's just make a good show. I don't care how people watch it. I don't care how you make your money. I don't even care if I get rich doing it. I'd like to just show up for work and make the show and make it good. And that is what happened in music, I think. You know, I'm not – the emergence of – incredible, passionate auteurs who, in their basements, who are like, now I have the whole internet, and I'm just like, I just want to play guitar. It's like these superstars that come out of nowhere. Like looking at The Weeknd, it's like just made himself like a ninja out of the darkness. That was a weird. That's crazy. He's the new Michael Jackson, and he's back.
Well, what
it's
it
weird.
Seems to me is that the tastemakers are the ones that are going to lose. The ones that are like their job is to go find these people or to say this is the great show. Or the people who work in Hollywood, the gatekeepers in Hollywood.
Yeah, the idea that there's that you need a Phil Spector in order to be a Ronette. That's thankfully going away.
Let me ask you about Starburns Industries, because now that you have your studio, what's next for you guys? What's the push? I mean, you're looking for more Anomalisa kind of projects that are they're a little bit more off the beaten path, that might be a little bit more risky in the sense that it's brilliant, or people are like, what the?
I think we want it just as brilliant, and we want the artist, you know, the writer to be just as hands-on. We just want something a little more accessible probably for our next one, because it is a studio and we do want to make money. Anomalisa, for me, I just wanted to make that. I wanted to get a DVD of it and put it on my shelf and watch it whenever I wanted to.
Well, it's good to be involved in something that's an Academy Award.
And I still want to do that ultimately, but I feel like the next project might have to make us a little more money, but I want it to have the same sensibility, you know, where we want the artist to be true to himself and make a beautiful movie.
And the irony is that the way for the next thing to make more money might have a lot to do with just scaling down the perceived prestige. You know, this whole idea of it has to be a theatrical release, the idea of going to festivals, the idea of going to the Oscars, it's all great, but none of this stuff is going to make us any money at all. No. What it's going to do, indirectly it will, because it's a huge calling card.
We
made Anomalisa, now let's talk about making your next movie.
Yeah, I think we've already made the money that we wanted to off Anomalisa, not through how much it made.
It's in the next 8 deals that we do.
Exactly.
The way we're going to end up making money is we're going to make a movie for $3 million and we're going to charge $5 a piece for it on the internet, and it's going to make $6 million. And then you're going to make 2 more movies. It's going to be like making pizza, like I which I like a lot.
Do you see yourselves at the forefront of crowdfunding? I mean, we talked about kind of you wished that it was a little bit more like we talked about earlier in the interview. Do you see you guys investing in creating that model?
I'd love to be able to be a part of that tip of the spear. I mean, I think Louis C.K. is like he's way out there, way out in front of everybody.
Right. He's sold stuff online.
He's becoming like a Howard Hughes of like independent television. And I always predicted that was going to happen. I wouldn't have predicted it would have been Louis. I would have thought it would have been like Vince Gilligan, or it's like an old pro who was like, well, my last overall deal has expired. My kid's in college. Now I'm just going to start screwing around. But it's Louis. He's actually like forging a path for everybody in terms of like it's not as simple as just crowdsourcing. He's cutting people in on the back end.
Yeah.
He's opening his books. He's operating transparently. He's saying, this is my next project. Here's how it's going to work. Hmm. I would love to operate like that, and even also say, as I was talking about earlier, just the idea of, well, let's use this biomass of people that want to watch stuff. They can all be investors. They can all be little Scott Rudins sitting in their apartments. And like that shelf of DVDs that represents all the money you pour into consuming entertainment, it could also be reflective of actually, like, you could break even.
Yeah, right.
You could call it your passion, your hobby, and maybe it doesn't pay your rent, but maybe it pays for itself. It would be like this crazy country full of people that just makes and watches stuff.
Well, we'll look forward to it. Starburn Industries is Dino Stamatopoulos and Dan Harmon. Obviously, these guys, you guys have been making some of the greatest work. Continue to do that. Producers on the film Anomalisa, Charlie Kaufman and Duke Johnson, nominated for an Academy Award for Animated Feature. And I feel safe saying the first rated R movie ever nominated in Academy
Award. What about the like Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings stuff? Like, was it none of that was ever nominated for an
I don't think so. I mean,
that was crap.
Shots fired, Bakshi.
What's next? Weather.
So now we're gonna do it. We'll do a break, and then we'll be back to the news.
Oh, the news! Yeah. I can't wait. What happens in the next 15 minutes?
That's it. You never know. It's just a radio pack. Yeah,
things change fast.
Right?
We're in 2016, buddy.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Okay, thanks.
More to come here on The Download. It's the halfway point of the show. Great conversation with Dan and Dino. Great to have them here. Dino from Chicago, Dan from Milwaukee. Two television writers that are, I mean, they're changing the face with the stuff that they do, but they're also responsible for some of the best shows. Mr. Show, Ben Stiller, Community. These are shows, I mean, I just scratched the surface on the stuff they've worked on. So can't wait to see what they come up with next. And I think they will have fruitful and tremendous projects with the advent of Amazon and Netflix and all that kind of stuff coming up. So, all right, halfway point coming up. Chewing. Why do we do it? Louisa Chew and Monica Ang will be in studio. We'll talk about their brand new podcast, Chicago Tribune food writer, Chicago Public Media food and health reporter. Both of them been doing a podcast for a long time, and they relaunched it. And they're going to be in studio to talk about some diet crazes and force me to eat something. So we will talk with them. And coming up at 10 o'clock, Steve Gadlin in the frying pan. Hey, it's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight when Patty takes over. Patty Vasquez, pretty late with Patty Vasquez. A little programming note, Pete Zimmerman and I are pulling double duty. We are going to be in tomorrow night for Amy Guth, for Amy Guth's show, 7 to 9. And Amy's been doing a great show. She just kind of started it maybe like a month and a half ago, maybe. And she's in South Africa. And they asked us to sit in, so we're going to sit in, which is great. And we're going to do the topic tomorrow night, should I stay or should I go? It's a great, easy topic about artists in Chicago and whether or not they should stay in Chicago or head for the coast for the money. I'd head for the coast for the money. You know me. I mean, that's just me, right? We got some great people in studio, though. Beth Malewski, who is from Second City. Who else is going to? Rhymefest will be here. Psalm 1, another hip-hop artist, will be here. Kate James from Schadenfreude, who is leaving next week for Los Angeles. So we will have a great conversation about what it takes to leave and come back to Chicago. That's tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. All right, right now, Monica Ang and Louisa Chew just launched their first episode of the new podcast, Chewing. The duo has worked together before. Louisa Chew is a food writer for the Chicago Tribune, and Monica Ang is a food and health reporter for Chicago Public Media. The podcast is about dieting trends, I mean, this episode, especially paleo, right? Mm-hmm. This is what I got interested in. What happens when the man who introduced the diet comes out against it? And is anyone even listening? And that's what we're going to talk about, among other things, this hour. Two of my favorite people in the world, Monica, Louisa. Aww. Great to see you.
So great to see Thanks, you, Justin.
You guys are back at it. I said in the intro here, first episode, but you just told me right before we started that you're dropping another
just
one.
Just a few hours ago, we
exactly.
dropped another one.
Fresh.
Without eggs. Fresh
we just
eggs.
Laid that episode down on you, Justin.
And we're cracking up all over the place.
All right, so here we go. So why don't we do this? We'll talk diet stuff from the first one. Yeah. We'll talk about how Louisa, we got to catch up because it's been a while. We'll talk about your
revelation?
What do you call it? You're vegan, but you're
PVPO.
You let the listeners figure out what that
exactly.
means.
And we'll catch up to that. Then let's talk eggs.
Yeah.
And then we'll see where we're at.
Yeah.
All right. So let's start this first episode. I mean, before we start with any of the topics, talk about the podcast. What's the goal of Chewing?
Well, you know, before we had this podcast, we had one called Chewing the Fat. Well, we've lost the fat. We've left right. the yeah. other organization that we were doing that podcast with. And now we're just Chewing. Right. Lose with Chew, Monica Ang, Chewing.
Oh, Chewing.
Exactly. You didn't get that,
no,
man?
Of course I got that. Yeah, okay. What are you talking about?
So
now we're Chewing.
For that too.
And we're really going to be including a lot more health in it. So it's both a food and health podcast. And so for our debut episode, we really wanted to like make some big revelatory announcements about food and health.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think we should back up and explain for people who don't know what paleo is, because not everybody knows what paleo is. Not everyone's a health nerd like Monica is, you know? So paleo
or just a nerd
is,
like Louisa
right.
is.
So paleo is, would you like to explain?
It's a diet and actually a lifestyle that bases its principles on the hunter-gatherer lifestyle. The idea that before we became an agrarian society, we were hunters and gatherers for a thousand or more years. And so our body hasn't quite caught up to all this grain and all this dairy that came into our lives once we became an agrarian society, and that we would be much better off and have less inflammation, and inflammation leads to all of our chronic diseases, if we would just go back to
the processed foods and the things we eat now. It's such a minuscule amount of time in the
exactly.
history of man, right?
Yeah, it's a blink of an eye.
Right. So really the way that the human body has sort of accepted food has been in a more paleo style.
Right. We evolved to digest the foods of our of our hunter-gatherer ancestors. That's the theory.
Yeah, but Justin, actually, so this is the so-called caveman diet. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not even just the processed foods they attack. I mean, in that whole long list of the so-called caveman diet, I mean, they're not even into stuff like dairy and grains. I mean, that's how hardcore they are about it. I mean, for a long time, basically, this caveman diet was eat meat. And so Monica had gone to
But lots of veg, too. Well, you know? But it is characterized. Everybody thinks of it as like...
Is that what it is? I mean, what is the paleo... I mean, because it's one thing to say, okay, this has been around for from the beginning of time. But it came back in the last couple of years, right? I mean, it's like I'm saying, like, in the last 2 years, it became like the fad diet. I mean, this is the diet that everyone's like, the Atkins and the South Beach that's out.
Right.
And it's paleo, right?
Everybody's paleo. And with it, it's CrossFit. You see all these CrossFit gyms. Yeah. Popping up everywhere. That's part of the paleo lifestyle.
You lift weights while you have meat in your mouth.
Exactly. Right. You carry brontosaurus steaks in your mouth while running at
the
top speed.
The Flintstones diet. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's become incredibly popular. And so when I talk to friends who, you know, and I know many of them who've had miraculous health reversals when they've gone on this, you know, acne's disappeared, migraines have disappeared, their weight's gone down, their energy is up. When I tell them, hey, you know, I talked to the guy who came up with this idea 35 years ago, and he says, cool it on the meat. They're like, don't tell me that. I don't want to hear that.
So that's what's happening here is that the man who is behind the actual paleo diet, who is like bringing back this resurgence, it's renaissance.
Yeah. This guy was like the godfather of paleo back in the day. And so now he's like... And in his 80s, and he's saying, well, you know what? Actually, hold on a little bit here.
1 second. Let me pump the brakes. Exactly. He's actually saying that the diet is unsustainable.
Mm-hmm. He is. His name's Boyd Eaton. Dr. Boyd Eaton, he wrote The Paleolithic Principle in 85, I want to say, in a big splashy article for the New England Journal of Medicine that originally presented this idea. And now he said... Sometimes you have to think about more than just your health. I still think that animal products, that animal protein is the way to the best health. But now we need to start thinking about more than just me, me, me. We have to start thinking about the planet. And the fact is, meat is really hard on the planet. It requires a lot of resources. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I was at this conference and everybody had the same slide was, if you're a vegetarian, okay, I'm opening my fingers like half a centimeter. This is your carbon footprint. If you eat chicken, a little bit more. If you eat pork, you know, about twice that much. If you eat beef, about 15 times that much. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh boy,
it's because it's because of the way that it's processed in the world we live in now, where it takes a lot to actually have
a lot of grain, a lot of water,
a
lot of transportation.
And that kind of stuff. Yeah, right.
And we should back up a little bit also because all these anecdotal. I mean, these people who tell Monica, yeah, going paleo makes me feel so much better. We have to back up because as people know, once people start paying attention to their diet, there's often that association with perhaps better health that had absolutely nothing to do with going paleo. But
you
more,
have to single out factors. But the fact is
so
they get
many.
Rid of processed food.
Yeah.
And then also there is so much evidence for people who are really high-level elite athletes who are vegan, for example. So as we keep always going back to, I mean, people, we always say it's up to an individual diet. I mean, there's these general guidelines. Paleo might work better for some person than another, mm-hmm. especially at a different point in their lives. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, yeah, this is the ideal diet, as a lot of fanatics, Monica, would like to say
well,
that they are.
Chicago Tribune food writer Louisa Chu, Chicago Public Media's food and health reporter Monica Ang, the podcast is called Chewing.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Chewing, even though right.
I like Chewing. Right. That's how I'm going to say it. Chewing. Chewing.
Right.
You get the podcast. When we come back, let's talk about your crossover to vegan. Just we leave here, a great quote here from 630. Say, paleo. The paleo guy seems recanting, and it seems to be no different from the man who created the K-cup hating himself for the waste it creates. It's the same kind of concept mm-hmm. that some of the things that we've all said, oh, this is great for us. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, you've made it messed up on one little part.
Right.
And wait, so we'll talk more with Monica and Louisa when we come back here on The Download. Stay with us.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Louisa Chu, Monica Ang, Chewang,
the fabulous podcast that you will want to subscribe to.
Where do you
now.
Get it? Just iTunes?
iTunes. Just yeah. go on iTunes, type in Chewing, and press subscribe 100 times for all your friends.
Right, yeah. And I don't,
that's not how it works, but that's right? okay. Yeah. Well, good. Good, good work. So we're talking about the podcast and the topics that you guys are taking on. We talked about the paleo diet, which is a big concern about the waste that it creates. But let's talk about the second part of that. Was about you going vegan, Louisa.
Well, it's actually what I like to call PVPO.
Okay, so explain this.
Which is personally vegan and professionally omnivorous. So
that's right, because you have a job.
Exactly.
You can't say, yeah. I'm vegan. I can't eat this pork chop.
Exactly. I told my partner, who is one of Louisa's bosses, that she's gone vegan. And he was not happy to hear that the new food writer that he'd hired just went vegan.
Oh, should be so ecstatic, actually, because, so of course, I literally just started upstairs at the Trip like last week. But, when I'm left my own devices, I do like to eat vegan. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that I spent much of last year in a remote one-room cabin in Alaska where I was almost food myself.
I don't think I've seen you since you did this.
Yeah.
So
no.
I remember you saying, I'm going to Alaska. It's
right.
like, okay, we'll see you.
Okay.
And then I followed you on Facebook, and I'm like, there's a lot of awesome shots of the environment there. And
yep.
The beautiful. Yeah. But tell me what it was like.
It was very wild. I mean, there was one photo which actually went viral where I took a bear selfie, but it was a safe selfie. I was in Katmai, which is where you see those photos of the bears grabbing salmon out of the stream, Brooks Reserve. But it's a place where you realize that you are part of the food chain. I mean, I was there with my dog, the late great Kiba, and when we walked, I mean, you had to be careful about not walking one way because bears were around and they were getting ready to hibernate. And then I also had a chance to help fillet 140-pound halibut on the beach.
I've got its head in my car right now, and it's 25 pounds itself.
Yeah,
in the Petruvian parking lot.
You're not kidding either.
No,
there's the halibut's head is in your car.
It was finally kicked out of the refrigerator at my place.
I needed space. Yeah. So, but it's a place where you, like I was saying, you really understand. I mean, very seriously, you are part of the food chain, and so it made me think a lot about the randomness about what animal lives and when animal dies, and that I could be part of that. And so, I mean, there's so many great things to eat in this world. I mean, like, why eat the same crappy burger? I mean, there's so many amazing things. And so I felt like since I had a chance to do that and really had a chance to eat wild meat, and trust me, I still do love eating meat. I mean, fried chicken skin is one of my favorite things in the world.
But only when you're working, right?
Exactly. I always crave it.
She's
I think
always asking, can I have the meat assignment? Right. Can I write the story exactly. about chicken skin, please? Right.
But I think that's one of those dilemmas that we as thinking human beings can have. I can have those cravings. I can want the pork cracklings. I mean,
how do you do that? How do you make a determination to go vegan and be able to handle the fact that you pretty much have to withdraw off of things that you were so used to in your diet?
But delicious cheese.
Right. But actually, you don't necessarily have to, because it helps you really rethink a lot of other things. It helped me really explore the wonderful world of mushrooms even more, and seaweed. I mean, those are foods that are highly sustainable, so varied that I don't miss just grabbing the same deli sandwich, for example. I mean,
I'm a little bit ignorant on it. What can't I eat if I'm vegan?
For people who are very strict about being vegan, I'm not necessarily so strict about it. It's no animal products and Monica Snickers.
I'm not so strict, yeah, because I eat meat for my job.
Personally, I am vegan.
This is not a good person to have right. Supporting your newfound diet.
Oh, I'm used to it.
Some vegans won't even wear wool or eat any honey.
So it's essentially about killing animals.
Not just killing animals.
Or exploiting any animals.
Exactly, because we explore this in our episode that just dropped today. But, I mean, also, some people are really strict about it, won't use, for example, sugar, because there's bone char that is used in processing sugar. I mean, so for me, it is really not eating animal products, meat, eggs, dairy, and my personal life. And no snickering.
Such baloney.
I mean, but a lot of it is because there is in industrial food production so many ethical questions that I'm not comfortable being a part of those, because we don't have the good answers for that. I understand that it is a difficult, complicated issue, but I think it's something that's certainly worth us thinking about, rather than just dismissing it and just being like, oh, well, yeah, you know, we should just totally be all up for chick shredding, for example. I mean, and that is something we should dismiss.
What about you? I mean, what's your usual diet? Are you just pretty much eat everything that's in front of you?
I eat as little meat as I can. I'll use it to flavor food. I'll use some pork or some lard to flavor my beans. I really try to keep it very minimal. Try to get stuff that's like super highly flavored. There's this one Thai northern style sausage where you can eat like one little quarter size of it, and it's got so much flavor it knocks your brain off. I mean, so I really try to shoot for that. I was very affected by those slides. And it's interesting because I've spent so many years as a reporter at the Tribune and then a reporter where I am now, trying to force myself to kill animals and force myself to look at the animals that I'm going to eat being killed, so as to say, okay, Monica, really? Do you like this? You still want to do this? And it's so interesting to me that it's the environmental factor that really threw me and said, hold on, Monica, your kids aren't going to have, you know, quite the same earth you had if this keeps up. And that's what I think has pushed me more. But have I given it up altogether? No. Have I reduced it a lot? Yes.
All right, let's take a break. We got to get to the news. Luisa Chu, Monica Ang, the podcast Chewing.
Yes.
I don't know why I love that so much.
Every time.
Chewing is on iTunes. You can check it out. We'll take a break. We'll hit the news. We come back. Let's talk. Continue the conversation, but let's talk about eggs, because that's a big part of the second episode you guys have. And then also, Monica, you did some work for this where you went to all the different people and the different diets to find out the ideal breakfast.
Yes, we're going to reveal.
Chewing here on The Download. Stay with us.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
It's a download here on WGN. Eggs.
Beastie Boys. Eggman.
Eggman.
I did not know that.
Eggs. That's what we're talking about here with Luisa Chu, the food writer for the Chicago Tribune, and Monica Ang, who's a food and health reporter for Chicago Public Media. Their podcast, Chewing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I like Chewang.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. is on iTunes. The second episode dropped tonight.
Yes.
So you can go find that on iTunes. We're talking about the topics that are in the podcast. We talked about paleo diets. We talked about going vegan. Just to pick up on that, 630 says, I can live without meat, and I'm looking forward to playing with eggplant and zucchini, but hard to give up cold turkey. What are your thoughts?
He doesn't want to stop eating cold turkey?
No.
Right. Hard to give up.
No. There's a big trend called reducetarianism, and that's any attempt to reduce the meat in your life. And they believe that really anybody who reduces a little is doing something for the planet. So don't beat yourself up if you haven't gone cold turkey. Any reduction is good for the planet.
So to speak. And I'd say that's a chance to really, like, go crazy and have things like avocado, you know? Like, I mean, those are, and like, I mean, all sorts of like really beautiful, luscious oils, like chili oils or like olive oils. I mean, just like go at the fat. I mean, don't go and just like, oh my gosh, I've got to eat like a carrot. I mean, you know, hello, deep fried breaded zucchini. Yeah, that can be vegan. Right. I mean, so, you know, there's lots of wonderful, delicious, creative things that you can have that don't have to have meat. Much less cold turkey.
All right, let's talk about eggs. Before we get to the eggs and the talk of eggs that are in this week's podcast, let's talk also about breakfast. Eggs and breakfast kind of go together kind of make that bridge from talking about the different diets to the next conversation about eggs. Let's talk about what you discovered, a little bit of research.
So in our coming out episode, the one where we talk about Louisa's going PVPO, I have this wonderful montage. I was at this conference where all the world's top nutrition experts were there.
What is this?
It's called the Old Ways Finding Common Ground Conference. And, you know, those who are nutrition experts are really frustrated by people who say, oh, what is it going to be this week? This is good for me. This is bad for me. And they're like, no, there is some consensus. So they wanted all of these world experts to come together over a weekend. We're all locked in a Boston airport hotel, and they have to come up with some consensus. And so there were a lot of fights behind the scenes. And so the first night cocktail party, I'm there. all of like the kings of and they're all men pretty much, of nutrition science are there. So I go up to him with my phone and my recorder and I say, hi, tell me your name, your affiliation, and the perfect breakfast. And so I have this montage. And obviously the vegan advocates were like, oh, soy milk with some oat bran. And others, most of them, frankly, said Greek yogurt, fresh berries, and granola or nuts.
Really?
I mean, if you've had a Venn diagram, that would be in the middle. And then you had some people who said, I love two delicious eggs and some pastured bacon.
Where cool. did Cinnamon Toast Crunch
That was not there, Justin.
Okay, all right. Okay.
But cinnamon, I mean, you know, go crazy with...
Cinnamon challenge, though.
No, definitely not Cinnamon challenge. No. Yeah. And actually, we should point out, too, is that the person who did say that he loved eggs and bacon was Barry Estabrook, who is the amazing food writer who wrote for Gourmet magazine. And actually, I had a chance to travel up to Alaska with him last summer during the salmon harvest, which is the world's biggest sustainable salmon harvest in the world. And so we definitely ate a lot of bacon and eggs.
And eggs didn't show up. Eggs only...
Right, he was the only one who said it, because he's not a food scientist. He's a food writer like we are. He wrote this wonderful book called A Pig's Tale and Tomato Land. He looks at policy a lot, but he likes to enjoy himself.
Right, so let's talk. What about eggs are you guys talking about in episode two?
Yeah, so last... this last episode, one of the things that I learned when Mark Caro wrote the book...
Chicago Tribune writer.
That's right. The Foie Gras Wars. I asked him about, you know, like, my gosh, when you write a book like that about, like, the force feeding of geese or duck, what was, like, the most horrific thing that he learned about when it came to, you know, animal food production?
That would be your question.
Yeah. And so, and I was surprised when he said, eggs. I was like, really? And this was a few years ago. And I, for some reason, like a lot of people, didn't realize that with like these beautiful eggs that we get mm-hmm. in the grocery store, even the organic pastured eggs, that what happens is that the baby boy chicks get shredded live.
What do you mean? What?
So for layer chickens are a certain
so layer
type
chickens
of chicken.
Are where most of the eggs come from.
Right. You have to have a layer. Yeah. And so some girl layers are born and some boy layers are born. And guess what boys can't do?
They can't
lay eggs. So as soon as they realize they're boys, they basically go in a blender alive.
And I was like,
basic,
what?
What? Yeah.
I didn't know. And for some reason, I couldn't believe that. I always thought, like, I think like a lot of people thought, is that they get raised older and those are like the frying chickens. But no. And so I think that that's a really difficult ethical question that we have to think about. We should think about.
If it's a byproduct of the egg industry business, can we support that business?
Yeah. And I mean, and so that happens again.
What else are we going to do? I mean, it's not like there's an alternative, is there?
Perhaps.
Well, you could find a farm that wants to raise all of these boys and then eat them later. But there's a German scientist who is working to do egg sexing early to find out.
I was going to ask that.
And mm-hmm.
It works for the Beverly Hills celebrities. It can't work for chickens?
I didn't know.
And so they know about 3 days on, and then they can turn those into omelets before they become cute little boy chicks.
Yeah.
Is that better? Yeah, probably a little bit.
Possibly. Yeah. So, you know, again, I think it's just something that we should consider. Chick shredding, egg sexing. Is that worth having what I admittedly crave? Who doesn't love like a beautiful runny yolk fried egg? I mean, and especially with Easter coming up, who doesn't love a wonderful egg salad? I mean, with that nice rich mayo, which I don't know that a lot of people know that like there's eggs in mayonnaise. We also talked to then for this current episode, actually, one of our chef friends from Chicago who was at Ben Roche, who is now actually the R&D chef at Hampton Creek, which a lot of people may know is the makers of Just Mayo. They make a lot more than just mayo. They make a whole bunch of stuff, things like cake mixes coming up. Mm-hmm. So it's like you got a lot of stuff. So
without eggs. The whole point is they're making all these products that used to have eggs without eggs.
Are they doing that because of allergies, because of sustainability? Why are they making?
All of the above.
Okay.
All of the above. They think that the egg industry is just too hard on the earth and too hard on the boy chicks. So let's try to duplicate this or replicate it without the eggs.
Because does it matter that we have real eggs in something like a cake mix or not? Right. For most people, it doesn't matter. And if it tastes just as good...
I'm interested to see how they taste and what they actually use.
I mean, it's all going to be taste, right? If you can make a cake mix without it, at the exact same taste without an egg, no one's going to care.
Exactly. Yeah. And we have tried the Just Mayo, and we've tried the cookie dough.
The Just Mayo's good, yeah.
Yeah, and they taste exactly and
just talked to a guy from the Humane Society of America, Josh Balk, about the strides they've made. They got IHOP, they got McDonald's, they got Bob Evans to all start using cage-free eggs. Is that a perfect system? No, but at least they can flap their wings, scratch their little scratcher.
Again, back to the ethics of it, the caged egg, which is probably the most popular seller in grocery stores.
It's cheap. It's $1.49 one.
It is inhumane in the worst possible
way. A lot of people believe
so.
Yeah.
Right. And again, I will admit that a lot of times I will crave a late-night Egg McMuffin. I mean, just...
You do? You know,
why not? Breakfast for dinner. I mean, that sort of, especially with a really crispy hash brown.
I don't know, man.
Really?
None of that McDonald's food does anything for me.
You know, I try to stay away from processed fast food, even if Louisa doesn't.
Oh, look at you. Look at Monica.
Exactly.
I got real toity up in here. Hoity-toity.
You food snobs here, but it sometimes hits a certain really nostalgic, really taste memory. But for also this episode, we have a little game we like to call Will She Eat It? And we decided to bring in our live play-along version.
Okay.
Which we'll we're going to be calling. Will He Eat It?
Exactly.
Will Pete Zimmerman Eat It?
Yeah, right.
Monica and I often disagree, but for this one egg episode, we decided we had to do the so-called thousand-year-old egg or the century egg, which is a preserved duck egg. And it's preserved in lye, not for 1,000 or 100 years, but... to the point where the white turns like a dark green.
Yeah,
translucent.
That's an egg, huh?
That is. And then the yolk inside turns kind of like this clay-like green. And so I brought it in for you, Justin.
Okay.
And I'm going to offer it to you.
Okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. Let's get the break out of the way so I can get myself... oiled up and ready for this.
Gut up.
Louisa Chew, Monica Ang in studio with me, their podcast, Chewing. Both episodes are up at iTunes now. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and we'll find out if he'll eat it.
Yes. Will he?
Download. Stay with us. How come you're always such a fuzzy young man? Don't want no Captain Crunch, don't want no Raisin Bran. Well, don't you know that other kids are starving in Japan? So eat it. Just eat it. Don't wanna argue, I don't wanna debate. Don't wanna hear about what kind of food you hate. Oh, little Weird Al. Beats by Zim, Pete Zimmerman. It's a download. Monica Ang, Louisa Chu are in studio. Louisa Chu, the food writer for Chicago Tribune. Monica Ang, food and health reporter for Chicago Public Media. Their podcast, Chewang.
Chewang. Sounds like Chewang, but Chewang. Spelled like chewing.
Look for us, Chewang.
It's on iTunes. You can check out the first two episodes. We're talking about a lot of different things, but right now we're on our new segment called Will He Eat It?
Yeah, it's a variation.
Let's talk about, again, set up what we have in front of you here.
So this is a thousand-year-old egg.
A thousand-year-old egg.
So-called thousand-year-old egg.
Our people like to exaggerate.
Right. Well, that's what it's called. I mean, everybody calls it a thousand-year-old egg or a century egg.
Which just means it's turned.
It's preserved duck egg that's been preserved in lye, and the white turns this like kind of almost like a soy sauce-colored gelatin, but the inside looks like green clay. And maybe it's like a perfect sort of like welcome to spring or St. Patrick's Day coming up. I mean, it's so we're going to offer.
All right.
So it's a
what's
little
the catch? What's why would it not be good? Just because it's 1,000 years old? Does it smell
just
bad?
It looks really scary, and it's got a kind of particular texture. Why?
Yeah, there's no odor. Come on.
There is an odor to it.
It smells. Doesn't just smell like a hard boiled egg to you? That's what
no.
I think.
It does not smell like
really?
A hard boiled egg.
No.
It smells like
1,000-year-old egg.
Here we go. Ready? Are we ready? Are we taking it? Okay. Here we go.
Justin's putting it in his mouth. I'm taking a big bite. Mm. Yeah, a quarter of the egg. I have it over white steamed rice.
It's all right. It's an egg.
Yeah. Exactly. But don't you think that the white is sort of like a sort of jello texture to it?
Yeah, it's good. It's not bad at all.
Exactly.
It's at first you're like, oh no.
Right.
Like when it hits your mouth, you're like, oh no, this is not gonna be good. This is gonna be a disaster. I'm going to I'm going to toss up my food on the air here. But then once you get past that first initial thing, it's like a little bit more gelatin egg.
Exactly. And so historically, this is the way that people were able to preserve eggs when they had
refrigerators.
Exactly. And it's classically eaten with a Chinese jiuke, rice porridge with like lean shredded pork. So our little game, will she eat it? And will he eat it?
Will she eat it is better than will he eat it, just because it's on your podcast and it's organic.
It's two middle-aged Chinese women daring each other to eat crazy things. And where else are you going to hear a podcast like that?
All right, so what are you guys working on? What's next? That's always my fun part, is trying to figure out what you guys are cooking up for future episodes.
Well, waste is a big deal.
Yeah.
Food waste is a huge deal. So I'd really like to go dumpster diving and finding what I can bring to Louisa to eat.
Right.
Because of food waste, there's some fantastic documentaries. There's something called Just Eat It, speaking of the Weird Al song. And there was a great one called Dive. That look at just the enormous amount of food waste in this country.
Yeah, no, I understand. But it seems like the idea of proving that there's waste by going through the waste
It's trying to save the waste by doing it. I don't want this to go in the landfill. I'm going to eat it myself.
I feel like that's already been done, and that's something that isn't really realistic for most
Louise
people.
Louise is always poo-pooing my segment ideas.
No, not at all. I say, Monica, go for it. My big thing is doggy bagging, because it's really funny.
Bags. You know those restaurants where you get 18 courses and these tiny little things? She asks for like 18 doggy bags.
So there's anything left on the plate, you get it?
Pretty much. Don't ask for 18 doggy bags. I will bring my own, because this is something that we can really control. It's the kind of irony is that, you know, people go to like a somewhat nicer restaurant and they're like, oh no, I couldn't possibly doggy bag. Why not? I mean, this is food. You have paid for it. And it's, especially if it's like a farm-to-table restaurant, who wants to throw that away? The person who cooked it doesn't want you to throw it away.
Guys are working in tandem in the way that, like, if you didn't doggy bag, Monica's in the garbage in the
bag. That's right, see?
And she'll get it. So
it's
got you covered.
Well, catch it before. Why wait for it to go into the dumpster? This is something you control. And actually, it's something that you can really encourage. I mean, like, remember, like, back in the day, people were always buying bottled water, and I'm not going to point fingers in the studio.
No, there's a reason we got bottled. We have no water anymore in the studio. Like, we lost our jug.
I did notice that.
Oh, yeah. So now we have the bottled water, but you're right.
You bring it from home, Justin.
Yeah, one of my friends.
Bathroom? Is there a faucet in the bathroom, maybe?
Or, like, back in the day, people would just be thirsty for a few minutes. God forbid, you know? I mean,
Didn't you do the story on lead? We're in the Tribune Tower. This is an old building. Like, I'm not going to go to the bathroom and be like, fill
up the
jug. You
need to check those water mains. Yeah.
You know, I brought my own zero water filter to have at my cubicle.
Actually, I'll come up to your cubicle.
I'm going to be doing a story. And look, anybody who wants to steal it before I do, did you know that hoses are lined with lead? Did you know that most garden hoses? Hello, am I the only one who drank out of it when I was a kid?
Yeah, right. I didn't know that.
And so I'm going to be taking a look at that. And they sell lead-free hoses. They're like $69. But if you don't
I'll take a little lead for
$12. Oh, come on. There's no safe level of lead. And then you pour it in your tomatoes.
We had that convo.
Well, maybe for you. But it's what if your son's a little slowed down? No, just don't drink out of the hose or use a water filter. It's okay. But doggy bags, I think, is something that you can really use. And it's we can carry our own.
I love doggy bags. I'm always into that.
You know what we should talk
about next time you guys come on is my newfound interest in crock potting. I crock pot every week now.
I can't wait to hear your recipe.
I did a chicken noodle. The problem I'm having is that they're not my recipes, because all I really do is go chicken noodle crock pot in Google.
Absolutely.
And then it pops up, and then I taste it, and I'm like, all right, well, this is pretty bland. I haven't figured out how to cook yet. I mean, it's one thing to I'm learning. So I'm chopping up all the stuff and I'm doing it and I'm like seasoning to my taste as opposed to it says one, you know, like
no,
the first
important.
Time I did it, I was like every single teaspoon was thing. And I was like pepper putting it in. So now I'm learning a little bit more about
to be more improvisational.
Seasoning. Yeah, because probably of the eight things that I've made, six of them are like bland. They're just here's all this stuff together.
So you just dump a Campbell's chicken noodle soup can into the crock pot and then you leave it?
I'm a Whole Foods guy.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but yes, the equivalent.
Well, the crock pot recipe
we have
people,
a lot to teach you.
Yeah, probably maybe in the blander palate side. We know when I did a lot of consulting for companies with new products, crock pots were like the holy grail. Everybody wants the new crock pot or the new George Foreman grill. Right. And so those are really convenient. I mean, and so there's a lot of recipes.
I wanted to cook because I wanted to be able to, especially in the wintertime, be able to have dinners here. Because if you're on Michigan Avenue, it's like everything is $11 plus for even fast food.
Not a lot of cheap food.
No, and so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do that. And so it's become this sort of, you know, cathartic thing. It's just this kind of, I like it. I like doing it. It's just I don't really know what I'm doing.
I did a whole story for the Tribune, pressure cooker versus crock pot. And we have people on both sides. No, but there are people, there are enthusiasts on both sides and actually can cook similar dishes in there.
You can.
But I had a lot of good crock pot recipes for those.
Well, I'm excited. And the GN faithful have given me a ton of recipes as well.
Oh, there you go.
I almost tried one of them, a Chinese chicken soup.
Huh.
But I then couldn't find it on the text. And so I just went with chicken marsala again.
We can share one of our old colleague Brian Babylon's crock pot recipes that he shared with us. It was one crazy recipe that he swears is the tastiest thing he's ever. No illegal substances. It just a lot of different things.
Well, good. Okay. Well, okay. So Louisa Chu, Monica Ng, the podcast Chu Ng, is on iTunes. Two episodes have dropped already. And what's going to be every 2 weeks?
Every two weeks on Friday afternoons, we're going to be dropping fresh new episodes.
All right. So you guys got to come back. We'll definitely have you on. We'll have regular I like Fridays. We could do Friday night special. We could be the competition to the Hungry Hound.
More about that later.
Thanks for being here. Thank you. Great to see you guys.
Thanks, Justin. Frying pan man, he'll make you move. He's the one man who'll make you groove. Nice and easy, baby, not too fast. Slowly as you go and make it last.
It is time for the downloads, the frying pan. That's how I like to say it. It's time to put Shark Tank Steve Gadlin into the frying pan. Gadlin is the brainchild behind the successful local business, I Want to Draw a Cat for You. He presented his business idea on the television program Shark Tank, and he snagged Mark Cuban as a principal investor. So now Steve has to go back to Cuban with new ideas. Before he goes into that pressure cooker, he comes to WGN Radio to jump into the frying pan. There we go. He's giving us his exclusive business idea so we can poke holes in it and give Steve the confidence to pitch it to Mark Cuban. Steve Gadlin, welcome to the frying pan.
Thank you, Justin. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Congratulations on another birthday. I know you got a birthday coming up tomorrow.
I do. In a couple of hours, I hit the big 40, so I'm tiptoeing into the years of elderly.
That's great, man. Congrats. Happy birthday. I mean, I think we're not just making that up. This actually could be a benefit for you as you pitch your idea tonight. People might be more sympathetic since you're celebrating a birthday.
Well, I hope so. But really what I think they'll do is see that I finally hit on something that everybody needs. And, they'll be lining up to purchase one.
All right. Well, we know the drill here. 312-981-7200. You could text that or call in with questions, ideas, feedback, concerns, and your overall judgment on whether or not tonight's idea, the frying pan with Steve Gadlin, is a good one. So why don't we get at it? Steve Gadlin, what's tonight's frying pan?
Well, here's the thing. We all love our smartphones. You know, we use them all the time, and we use them to play games. We use them to get text messages, check the weather, all sorts of things. But one of the problems that we all suffer from is you can't take your smartphone into the shower with you.
Right.
So you put it down on the sink, and what happens, you might be getting 10, 20 alerts while you're in the shower, but how do you know about it without constantly opening the curtain and checking your phone?
Right.
So what I've invented is a device called Shower Alert. What it does is it connects your shower head to your phone with Bluetooth. And every time your phone gets an alert, the water switches in 15-second intervals between cold and hot, for 15 seconds to alert you without even making a sound, just alert you through water temperature that something's going on with your phone so that if you need to, you can get out of the shower and check your phone. And maybe it's your turn in Yahtzee, or maybe you get a text message from a friend. But it keeps you in the loop while you're bathing.
Okay. And it's called, what's it called again?
Shower Alert.
Shower Alert.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shower Alert. That will change the water temperature. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it keeps notifications, but instead of with your phone vibrating, it will change the water temperature so the hot just shuts off. So you get a blast of cold for 15 seconds, and then the cold shuts off, and you get a blast of hot for 15 seconds. So it alerts your body that something's going on with your phone. Could be an important weather alert, could be a text message from a family member, could be a phone call from your boss, could be your turn in a game that you're playing.
It's something that you need to know, essentially.
Well, you know, that's up to you. It's something, you know, none of us like to miss alerts on our phone. So this closes that gap while we're in the shower for the 20, 30 minutes while we're in the shower, keeps us in the loop.
Okay, well, I have questions, and okay. I know that every week I do, and I like to defer to our audience because they've got better questions. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can call talk to Steve directly with ideas, concerns, questions, comments, or you can text and tell us what you think. On text, 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll take your calls and text, yay or nay, to Shower Alert. Steve Gadlin, it's The Frying Pan, it's WGN Radio.
I am Pan Man, he'll make you move. He's the one man who'll make you groove. Nice and easy, baby, not too fast. Slowly as you go and make it last.
It's The Download. Here on Friday night, I'm Justin Kaufman. You hear that song, you know it's time for The Frying Pan with Steve Gadlin, local innovator. He was the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He won on Shark Tank. He now has a principal investor that is Mark Cuban. Before he brings his new ideas to Cuban, he brings them here to The Frying Pan to workshop them in with the WGN radio audience. A lot of people calling in. Once again, Steve, why don't you give us the elevator pitch for Shower Alert?
Yeah, so one of the things we all hate about showers is that we lose touch with our cell phone. You know, for the 20 or 30 minutes while we're in there bathing, mm-hmm. we don't know if we're getting any alerts on our phone because they haven't yet made a cell phone that you could bring in the shower with you. So what Shower Alert does is it connects to your phone through Bluetooth, and anytime there's an alert on your phone, you're alerted by the temperature of the water changing from hot to cold, in 15-second intervals.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 312-981-7200. Lots of feedback already. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the line. Let's go to Dave. Dave, welcome to The Frying Pan. Yay or nay to Shower Alert?
Definite nay.
Okay.
Can I say why?
Yeah, please.
Well, I take a shower to get back in touch with myself so I can turn off the outside world for just briefly, because I've forgotten how dirty and filthy I am, and I like the hot water running on me to, you know, get my, you know, body temperature and, you know, rhythm started. And then when I'm done with it and I dry off and put my clothes back on, then I want to, you know, use the phone and, you know, get all that outside technological overstimuli that we get.
I just
think that this is, you know, I don't like it. It's more technological insanity.
There you go. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for that. Technological insanity.
Well, it's Dave's right to tune out and turn off when he's in the shower, but that's not everyone's modus operandi, right? Mm-hmm. Some of us like to stay connected, especially those of us under 42. I'll say under 42. We like to stay connected, and if it's our turn on Yahtzee, we want to know about it. We can't wait till our shower.
A lot of Yahtzee tonight. Let's go to Joanne.
Well, Yahtzee's a lot of fun.
Yeah, okay. Well, Joanne, welcome to The Frying Pan. Yay or nay on Shower Alert?
Oh, definitely nay. I agree with Dave. I mean, you know, you want to get in the shower. And who takes a shower for 30 minutes? I never heard of anyone taking by then you'd run out of hot water. But anyway, I think that is your alone time. And why do we have, you know, messages on our phone? We don't have to be bothered in the shower. I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Joanne. Thanks for calling in. A lot of nays on the alone time.
You know, I think we're getting sort of a weird random sampling here, and I think we're cutting across an age line here. Once you start answering calls from some of your younger callers,
right, well, okay.
I think you're going to see a lot of appreciation for this idea. So I think there'll be a surge of yays.
Okay, well, 312-981-7200 is the number. Yay or nay for shower alert. Let's keep on the line. Let's go to Jason. Jason, yay or nay for a shower alert?
That's a big old nay.
Okay. Why, Jason?
Well, I mean, who wants to be bothered anyways? I mean, phones are annoying anyway. I mean, when you go into the bathroom, you want to take a shower, you want to do what you got to do, and you want to get out. Certainly, definitely, no one's taking 20, 30-minute showers in Chicago. I mean, our water bills are out through the roof, you know?
Yeah, right.
You know,
I hear you.
We don't want to get cold either when we get a stupid message on our phone. We'll check it when we get out. I think it's a horrible idea. I hope you didn't invest a lot of money in it.
All right, well, thank you, Jason. Thank you for that. Again, there seems to just be a resounding nay to the idea of interrupting shower time.
Yeah, and I think people are astounded that I take a 30-minute shower. And I think the issue there is they're probably just not timing their own showers. Mm-hmm. They probably feel like, and it doesn't feel like 30 minutes, but I tell you, it's at least 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So I think people need to remember that while they may not need to stay in touch with the outside world, some of us are important inventors who always have a deal, you know, an iron in the fire, and
right.
would appreciate knowing when it's our turn at Yahtzee or if we're getting a text message or a phone call from somebody.
815 says, great idea. I also think using a hair dryer while showering is a good idea, too. So I think that might be
okay,
actually
well,
sarcastic.
No, I won't endorse that. I think that's actually a little dangerous.
Go ahead.
I think your first question before yay or nay should be, can you tell us how old you are? Because I think we'll definitely see, you know, as we get down into the younger ages, out from the elderly range, we'll see a lot more people.
We don't usually do that, but I mean, I randomly ask people here. I mean, let's go to Joe. Joe, you're on the frying pan. Yay or nay to shower alert?
Definitely a nay. It's nonsense. I'm sorry, but nobody needs to be playing Clash of Clans that importantly while showering. And I think it's tantamount to having the toilet flushed on you while you're in the shower. Nobody likes that.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, it gets your attention.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for that.
And he's not denying that it gets your attention if the water suddenly turns freezing for 15 seconds. You know, you'll know that that something's happening on your phone. And I hadn't mentioned Clash of Clans. I'm not even sure if that game gives alerts.
Yeah,
but if you think of a game like Yahtzee or some of the other games you can download from the App Store, you know, I think, again, I think it's a great idea. I think he's missing the point.
I've got some texts here. 309 says, if you change the interval to more or less than 15 seconds, I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, that could be an adjustment. There could be a slider that lets you make it happen in 30-second intervals.
Okay.
Or in 5-second intervals. Either way, I think once you get that first shock of cold water, you'll know that the alert is on.
Right.
So maybe you just need that.
There's a lot of technical questions on text.
Okay.
219 says it can't be accomplished with a shower head. It would have to be installed at the mixer valve.
Well, listen, I'm no plumber, but I know that we can connect to the shower head using Bluetooth and just send a cold command to it. Mm-hmm. And that should be no problem.
All right, let me get some of these calls in before we hit the news. Let's go to David. David, yay or nay on a shower alert?
Hey, Justin, how you doing tonight?
Hey, man. Thanks for calling.
I'm going to say a nay. I just tuned in and I heard it. And a couple of things, I don't know if they've even been touched on, but first of all, you can take your phone into the bathroom with you and turn the volume up on your alerts to know that you get an alert. And second of all, if you're in the shower, what are you supposed to do? Stop your shower, check your phone, then get back in the shower, and then stop, check your phone. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, David. Thank you for that. That's a good point. He's saying, why not just use what's available now? Why do you have to change it to...
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people turn the volume down on their phone when they're in the shower because they just don't want to be bothered with technology while they're having some alone time. So that might not be an option. And second, yeah, that is the idea. When you get the alert, you can, you know, pull open the shower curtain, step out of the shower, dry your hands off, and check the alert to see if it's an important one. If it is, maybe you take your turn at Yahtzee. Or if it's not, maybe you put your phone back down and you go back in the shower.
Let's go to Jim. Jim, yay or nay on shower alert?
Yeah, I'm a yay there.
Hey, all right.
There we go.
Yeah, it's an honor to talk to you there, Steve. You're such a genius.
Thank you, Jim.
I've been following you. You know, I mean, Mark Cuban doesn't surround himself with idiots or anything.
That's right.
But
that's great to hear. You know, I appreciate that compliment.
I get up in the morning and I hop in the shower and I start maybe to fall asleep a little bit and boss is calling and this would be the perfect thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, that makes sense. Jim, thank you for that. And, you know, Pete has been screening, and he said Jim was 42 years old. So,
okay, well, there you go. That's right on the money, and I think that's the threshold you're going to find.
All right, well, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You know, maybe this is a turning point. That was your first yay after a successive nay run. There were a lot of nays there.
And I'm thinking once the Yahtzee circles get wind of this, you'll get a lot of yays as well.
Well, during the news, I'll try to find a Yahtzee Facebook group and see if we can let them know what's going on. But 312-981-7200 is the number. Calls are lining up here. We're going to take a break, get to the news with Rob, and we'll come back and we will continue the conversation. Shower alert, yay or nay, here on the Frying Pan. Stay with us.
Frying Pan Man, he'll make you move. He's the one man who'll make you groove. Nice and easy, babe, and not too fast. Slowly as you go and make it last.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it's Friday night, 10 o'clock hour, so it means it's a frying pan. Steve Gadlin is the man behind IWantToDrawACatForYou.com. He won on Shark Tank, and because of that, he got a development deal with Mark Cuban. So before he brings new ideas to Mark Cuban, he brings them here to the Frying Pan, to WGN Radio, to workshop them, to get yay or nay, to get some feedback. Tonight's idea, shower alert. Steve Gadlin, tell us a little bit about shower alert.
Yeah, so it is a Bluetooth-connected device for your shower head that lets you take a shower and still stay in touch with the outside world. Anytime there's a notification or an alert on your phone, it will instantly turn the temperature all the way to cold and then blast, you know, for 15 seconds and then all the way to hot for 15 seconds and all the way to cold with adjustable intervals. And that alerts you that your phone has an alert. So if you want, you can pop out of the shower and check your phone.
All right. There's a lot of questions on text, a lot of technological questions, but then also a lot of interesting philosophical questions about, you know, taking showers in peace, not having your phone in the shower with you. Can you not?
Well, you can't take your phone in the shower with you. That's
no, but they're just
problem.
Saying, like, you know, that's a time for you to put technology away. Unwind.
You can put technology away whenever you want to. I'm not telling people not to do that. I'm not forcing people to install Shower Alert. I'm just giving people the opportunity to stay connected during that half hour to 45 minutes that they're doing their daily morning or evening shower.
312-981-7200 is the number. Let's go to Kylie. Kylie, yay or nay on Shower Alert?
I'm all for the idea of having your phone in the shower with you, but why buy something when you can just buy like a $2 plastic bag, a clip, and like a sticky thing, and just put your phone in a Ziploc bag and bring it in the shower with you?
That's a great question. Thanks, Kylie. Thanks for that. That's a good point. Like, why not?
I tell you, nobody likes to put things in Ziploc bags. That's thing number one. When Steve Jobs designed the iPhone, he designed a piece of art. Okay, that's not something you want to look at through a Ziploc bag using a a tie hanging in your shower. It's a beautiful thing. You want to drop it on your sink. And, you know, I think Shower Alert allows people to maintain the integrity of their telephone,
okay,
and still stay in touch with the outside world.
Okay. She made a good point about cost. There have been a couple of questions about how much the shower alert would cost.
Well, keep in mind it's Bluetooth enabled, so there's some expensive technology embedded. The device itself is $75, but there's a $300 one-time installation fee to have a guy come in and set it up.
So you have somebody set it up. It's not something that just...
Anytime you're working with a home's plumbing, there's most of it attached to the shower head, but there is a piece you need to rip out the wall to attach further down in the piping. And again, I'm no plumber. I might be using the wrong words, but there is some drywall removal that has to happen to get this thing properly installed.
Hmm. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Caesar. Caesar, yay or nay to shower alert?
I'm going to say nay, and with what he just said right now with the price, I think it's definitely too steep for maybe a slight inconvenience that somebody might have. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm in with that batch that definitely doesn't take 30 to 45-minute showers.
Yeah, right.
I mean, when somebody just says, taking a shower, you say, I'm going to jump in the shower. So, it's a quick thing.
Well,
and
I don't know about that.
It depends on what you're doing, I guess, the situation. But it's the whole cold interchange thing. I think that's another thing that, people do. A lot of people go in the shower to, relax. If you're going to change it from cold to hot really fast in 15 seconds, that's a little annoying to me. And maybe if it was pulsating, that might be a little better. But I think in general...
Caesar, think about how annoying that is. But now, how annoying is it to miss your turn at Yahtzee?
But, that's the other thing. I think that, in general... It seems like it could be a feature for like an encompassing smart home kind of feature. But
do you even play Yahtzee, Caesar?
I've never played Yahtzee.
There you go. So I don't even think he's qualified to make a judgment on it.
All right. Well, it's just a game, Steve. I mean.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anything permanent, that I would need to respond to that badly where I can't just, sweat a little bit.
Yeah,
so, right.
It's a free country.
Okay. Well, thanks, Caesar. Thanks for that. I'm not a huge fan of the free country argument, Steve. The idea that, that's your argument back.
Well, he was saying, to go back to his first argument, he says the pricing is a little steep. How much did he pay for his iPhone? And that's a beautiful piece of art. And it's pretty expensive. It's upwards of $600, $700, $800 if you're buying it off the rack.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's keep going. Let's go to Brandon. Brandon, yay or nay on shower alert?
Yay.
Hey, all right. I'm writing it down, Brandon. Thank you. Why yay?
Well, I live alone now. My wife and kids died in a horrible fire.
Okay.
And it used to be that, my wife would come in and flush the toilet and I would get scalded with burning hot water, and I miss that, and then also the kids, they use up all the hot water, so then, I'm getting this blast of freezing cold water, and, it would just remind me of that.
Well, I apologize for that. That sounds terrible. He was 43, Steve, so you get an idea.
I missed most of that. I was taking my turn on Yahtzee.
Oh, well, there you go. 312.
Was it a yay or an A?
Yay. He gave a yay. Right. So there you go. So 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break. We'll get to the last of the calls, and then we'll go through some of these texts.
Okay.
Just like every frying pan at the end, we like to go to the more of the colorful stuff that was said. Yay, positive and negative, but we will definitely be... reading some stuff that will test your patience, Steve, coming up here after the break on the Frying Pan here on the Download WGN Radio. Stay with us.
Frying Pan Man, he'll make you move. He's the one man who'll make you groove. Nice and easy, babe, and not too fast. Slowly as you go and make it last.
It's the Frying Pan here on the download. Steve Gadlin is with us, a longtime inventor. I want to draw a cat for you.com. This is the part where we get through all the texts. We have a lot of texts tonight, so I'm just going to go rapid fire. You ready, Steve?
I'm ready.
All right. 630 says, all caps, try again. That's all I got. 630 says, I'm sorry, but this guy Steve is an idiot.
Wow.
First of all, you can't leave your phone long enough to take a shower. Second of all, who wants to get hot and then cold on them in the shower? His last idea was idiotic as well. So there's a lot going on in that one.
I don't even remember what my last idea was.
It was the honk tapper from last week.
That was actually a good idea.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Okay. Let's keep going here. Let's do perfect for, this is 847, this is perfect for somebody with ADHD. For the rest of us,
Okay. Well, there you go.
It embodies everything that is wrong with advanced technology.
Now, people are so scared of robots, and I think a lot of that is because of all these movies that show robots taking over and killing all the people. But I just don't see that happening, especially with a device like this. So I think, you know, their fear of technology is a little misplaced here.
224 says, if you can't go without your phone for 10 minutes, you've got a real problem.
Yeah, but what if you're waiting for a very important phone call, but you also need to take a shower? I mean, people are acting like I'm forcing people to use this. This is a tool for life. You can ignore the hot cold alert if you don't want to check your phone. You don't have to check your phone every time the water blasts from freezing to scalding in 15-second intervals. Mm-hmm.
309 says, bad idea. What's next? An alert during sex?
Well, maybe. That's actually a good idea. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, but then we're not talking 30, 45 minutes, though. We're talking 3 minutes, and I'm sure you can step away for 3 minutes.
224 says, I'm 39 years old. The shower alert? Hell no. If it's important, I'll get it 10 minutes later.
Well, they may have mistyped their age on that one, because that sounds like something a 49-year-old would say.
Okay.
Or maybe they're older than they look. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
224 says, Yahtzee, did this guy watch too much Supernatural?
I've never seen the show.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy the game Yahtzee.
312 says, nay, shower steam can damage your cell phone.
Well, exactly. That's why we don't bring the phone into the shower. It's not just the steam, but actually, little known fact, the water from the shower will damage your cell phone too. So you keep your phone out of the shower and you rely on shower alert to let you know. It doesn't even have to be in the bathroom.
815 says, bad idea. I'm 21. I'm already constantly connected. I like my personal time in the morning.
Okay. Well, I think this person must just be misunderstanding what this does. It lets you keep that personal time by gently alerting you when your phone gets a notification, which you do not have to respond to. That's what I keep wanting to reiterate.
773
don't have to respond to it.
Says, go draw cats.
Okay. Well, actually, okay. I will be later tonight. So,
773 says, not needed, 82 years. So I'm guessing that's how old that person is, 82.
Yeah, and frankly, I think alternating hot and cold water in the shower of an 82-year-old would probably kill them. So
all right, so you gotta make sure that you're not borrowing someone's shower, right?
That's actually a very good point. You know, we have a sticker that goes on the wall of the shower that says, warning, shower protected by shower alert, just so
that's good,
know.
Because that was a... Yeah. That's, yeah. Okay.
You know, I mean, if your kid is in the shower and your phone goes off, they're going to get the alert.
Right.
So, you know, there are some lifestyle changes that go along with shower alert, but none of them, none of them are too big a hassle, I think, for that extra notification.
708 says, what's the obsession with Yahtzee for such an important inventor? It sounds like he wouldn't have time for playing.
Well, I do play Yahtzee on my phone, and it's important to me that when someone takes their turn, I take my turn quickly after. So they're not left hanging. It's just rude Yahtzee etiquette to leave someone hanging for several hours.
262 says, I'm 19 years old. I would not like this idea. I hate when water gets cold on me, so I'd find it extremely frustrating.
Well, that person sounds like they might be somewhere on the spectrum. I don't want to...
Okay. Well, 815 also says, why don't you just go put your head in a Ziploc bag?
Well,
I don't know how to respond to that one, Justin. Maybe you can help me out.
Okay, well.
Because I'd suffocate?
Yeah, I think so. 773 says, yay to the shower alert because Yahtzee is the bomb. P.S. I'm 12.
Well, there you go. There you go.
630 says, please, please, please never have this man on again.
Well, I think that's probably another inventor that's a little jealous of the attention I'm getting for my invention.
Yeah, that could be it. 847's got an idea they should have for an add-on camera that takes shower selfies and automatically posts them to Instagram and Twitter.
Well, that's a slight violation of privacy, but I'll be honest, it is something we are working into the device. So
847 says, I want to take a peaceful shower. Anything can wait till you're out of the shower. Definite nay. This guy's a loser. Okay.
I just don't know about that.
Yeah, 847 says perhaps Shower Alert can read your text messages to you in Morse code, with the cold blast being dots and dashes. That's creative.
Well, patent pending, so I hope they're not developing that as well.
773 says this guy's not very bright. 815 says ask Steve how business is going with his I Want to Draw a Cat for You. Probably pretty bad.
It's going fine, actually. The holidays were great.
331 says this guy is a freaking idiot. 630 says total insane. 630 says, why do I feel like my brain cells are dying listening to this joker?
I don't know. Well, I don't want to guess as to what else they're doing while they're listening, but I have a couple of guesses.
Yeah. 815 says, I'm a 30-year-old female, and I say nay. This guy has contradicted himself multiple times, and he sounds like a D-bag. You're saying you're important because you're an investor? That's insulting, idiot.
No. She misheard. I'm saying I'm important because I'm an inventor. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she'll call back with an apology.
309 says, all of Steve's comebacks make zero sense.
Okay.
This guy is incredibly rude, one good idea.
My comebacks might make zero sense, but my inventions make many dollars, huh?
Yeah. 219 says, this guy's a really good salesman. Too bad his ideas are way out there, terrible bad.
Okay. Well, again, this is one I'll be honest, I expected a lot more yays on. Yeah,
you're not getting a lot. Oh, no, I got a Steve is a genius here. Hold on, where'd that go? It's a rhyme for a vulgar text. No, I'm sorry.
Oh.
What rhymes with genius? You can figure it out. Sorry. So there you go.
I think the target audience for this just might not be listening. I think if other people had tuned in tonight, we'd be having a whole other response to it, because I think this idea is gold.
I mean, I think that I just went through probably about 30 texts. We probably had about 15 calls. So let's just say that the overwhelming, I mean, you probably got a cross section, probably 50 responses, and 47 of them were no. So I'm just saying, like, it's a cross section. We don't plan any of these calls. We don't put any, plants. These are people that called in. So the idea that being 47 out of 50 said no, the idea that it wasn't the right sample size doesn't seem to work.
But I think next week you might want to spend some time at the beginning reminding people which one is yay and which one is nay.
Okay.
Because I think the 30-year-old female called and said nay because she likes horses. So,
right.
I think we might be getting a skewed response because of that.
Okay, well. I would say that you got some work on this one. I do like the concept. I do like the idea that you're finding ways to make people's lives more connected. But I would say that right now Download Nation has spoken and they have said a collective nay.
Well, no, what they've said is, you know what, this idea is too advanced for us, is what they've said.
Well, I mean, they wrote N-A-Y. So I would say more nay than what you said about advanced.
Okay.
But Steve, you did great. Once again, an amazing idea, and you know what? It just seems like it needs to go back into that workshop that you've got, and hopefully we'll hear about this one at some other time once you've refined some of the ideas. Steve Gadlin from I Want to Draw a Cat for You.com. Last words?
Well, yeah, I think I'll bring this one back to the drawing board, but people will hear of it again. So not counting it out yet.
All right, bud. Well, happy birthday. Congrats on being 40. I wish I was there to celebrate with you. Don't let this get you down to start your birthday, because you know you're loved, you're respected.
Yeah, well, it can only get better from here. So
there you go, you know. Steve Gadlin. Yeah. Thanks for joining us here on the Frying Pan. All right, well, that's going to do it for us tonight. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. We'll be back on Monday with pastry chef Mindy Siegel. I'm looking forward to talking to her. And we're also, actually, programming note, we'll be back here tomorrow night. Pete and I will be back here Saturday. We're filling in for Amy Guth. And we will have a great show tomorrow, 7 to 9, here on 720 WGN.